ജയം ശുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീലാ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യവനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീല പ്രഭുപാദ് നമാം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശതാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്ധസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയ ചക്ഷുരുന്മിളിതം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകഥാ മഹ്യം ദദാതി സ്വപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാന്വിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാൻ സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാൻവിതാം ച നമാം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്തസ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതിദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശതാരിണേ നമാം വിഷ്ണുപദായ പ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതീതി നാമിനി ശ്രീവർഷഭാനുവിദേവി ദൈതായ കൃപാബ്ദയേ കൃഷ്ണസംബന്ധ വിജ്ഞാനം ദായിനേ പ്രഭവേ നമഃ മാധുര്യോജ്വല പ്രേമാദ്യ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗഭക്തിദ ശ്രീഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ നമസ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീമൂർത്തയേ ദീനധാരിണേ രൂപാനുഗവിരുദ്ധാഭ സിദ്ധാന്തദ്വന്ദ്ധഹാരിണേ നമോ ഗൗരകിഷോരായ സാക്ഷാത് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയേ വിപ്രലംബരസാംബോധേ പാദാംബുജായതേ നമഃ നമോ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനി ഗൗരശക്തിസ്വരൂപായ രൂപനുഗവരായതേ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമേസ്ത്വം നിർദ്ദേഷ്ടാ സജനപ്രിയ വൈഷ്ണവാ സർവഭൗമ ശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായതേ നമ വാഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യാശ്ച കൃപാ സിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം ഭാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ നമോ മഹാവതന്യായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രേമ പ്രദായതേ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ നാമ്നേ ഗൗരതുഷേ നമഃ ത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം രൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമിം ഭക്തശാസ്ത്രീയം ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ജയതാം സുരതോപാംഗോർ മമ മന്ദമതേർഗതി മത്സർവസ്വ പദാംബോജോ രാധാമദനമോഹനോ ദിവ്യവൃദ്ധാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദ ശ്രീമന്ദ്രത്നാകര സിംഹാസനസ്ഥോ ശ്രീമദ്രാധാ ശീലഗോവിന്ദദേവോ പ്രേഷ്ടാലിഭി സേവ്യമാനോ സ്മരാമി ശ്രീമന്ദ്രാസരസാരംഭി വംശീ വടതടസ്ഥിത കർഷാൻ വേണുസ്വനേർഗോപിർഗോപിനാഥ ശ്രീയസ്തുനാഹ തപ്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവീ പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ From now on, we will simply discuss Bhagavad Gita for many months now because we have a long way to go. It's just now we have the 8th, 9th and 10th chapters. Then we have from 13 to 18. So 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 6 chapters and now another 3 chapters. Total 9 chapters still left. So both Saturday and Sunday we'll continue with Bhagavad Gita. Let us come to an end Bhagavad Gita and then we'll move on to other things. So as you know that this after 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, from 7th to 12th it is called Bhakti Shalkam. Bhakti Shalkam means the 6 chapters referring to Bhakti. Why is it when you read through these chapters it doesn't given a semblance of Bhakti what we have thought about? This is the most beautiful side of these 6 chapters. As soon as you start the 7th chapter, what you notice first thing is about the knowledge of the Absolute. As the introduction to Bhakti is knowledge of the Absolute. Jnana Yoga, it says. So you will see here in the Bhagavad Gita that each and every chapter, as you start going through, you will notice something on a deeper level working within all of us. That you will experience yourself. If you are seriously studying Bhagavad Gita, you will notice this. This is the impression of many, many personalities who have taken Bhagavad Gita seriously. They have always said that this, as soon as you finish Karma Yoga, because Karma is the first part of our life where we require purification. Therefore, Krishna mentioned Karma Yoga as the introduction, practically the first 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Without Karma being in a pure state, it is difficult to advance in the path of Bhakti or Jnanam. Or, in order that the Jnanam to build up or the Bhakti to build up inside, Karma is a basic requirement to be as a yoga system. Karma has to be a yogam, otherwise it will be very difficult to get the understanding what Krishna actually intended from Bhagavad Gita to us. We all have great difficulty. I know that we all say this. We hear a lot of things in Bhagavad Gita and we also think it is correct what Krishna is saying, but nothing is happening inside. This difficulty, everybody goes through this phase in life. We'll come to that. So when we discuss this 8th chapter, Krishna mentions there that Krishna talked about death first. Andhakaleja mameva smaran muktva kalevaram ya prayadi, that is the verse number 5th one. Ya prayadi samalbhavam yadi nasti atra samshaya. He said that. And then in the next verse he said, yamyam vabhi smaran bhavam tejatyande kalebaram tam tam evedi kaunteya sada tadbhav bhavida. We have seen these two verses in detail, isn't it? And then Krishna said, tasmad, therefore, sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyacha mai arpita manobuddhir mam aveshyasi asamshaya. That is the next verse. That is the verse number 7, isn't it? So, there, you can notice that one thing, Krishna is saying, that in order that this last thing, what he mentioned in the 6th verse to happen, that is yamyam vabhismaran bhavam, in order that to happen, therefore, tasmad, sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyaja, mai arpita manobuddhir mam aveshyasi asamshaya. That is where what we were discussing in the last last class also. So there mentioned also that normally this sarveshu kaleshu means right now. That is how we have to understand that. Not past or future. Past, future, present has no value in spiritual life. Nobody takes into account time factor in spiritual life. Right now, if you do it, that's it. That's what a sarveshu kaleshu means. Not that, oh, I did. You shouldn't lament about it. Oh, I didn't do it in the past. You shouldn't lament about this, what will happen to me in the future. That has no meaning in spiritual life. Sarveshu kaleshu means right now, if you do it, you have the benefit. You will have the benefit. So time fact, because on a spiritual level, body is not taken seriously. Body is the thing that's temporary, isn't it? Body is the thing that's temporary. Mind is the one that's temporary, but we are not temporary. This is the reason behind it. We are not temporary. We live forever. We don't live for today or tomorrow. Past and present is all in relationship with the body. Therefore, we were discussing this also. Normally, we have this nature that we tend to follow others. If they do it, we will also do it along with them. But once they go, we are in a mess. We can't do anything anymore. We feel completely lost in that process. So that is the situation. So it is at that time we start realizing in spiritual life, unless there is some trace of kripa or grace from Krishna comes in some form in life, it is always a struggle to move further. It is very difficult. Everybody finds it very, very hard till something starts coming from Krishna's side. Because the branch you are holding on to has gone suddenly. The person whom you have taken shelter of in spiritual life, that personality has gone. Body has gone. Form has gone. And it only remains in the memory, certain things, isn't it? So that is why kripa, as soon as you will notice that there is some natural phenomenon happening in spiritual life, when a person is progressing on the spiritual path, there is certain indications of that. The first thing is that he will be withdrawing from karma. Unnecessarily engaging in karma will not be his nature anymore. Karma, he has to withdraw. There is no other way. For a higher purpose, karma is not an important thing. Karma is something that has come associated with this body. Isn't it? Prarabdha shariram is called prarabdha karmam, this body is called. Because the body is there, the karma is there. That's all. If the body is not there, the karma is not going to be there. Because it is associated with the body, and when the realization of our spiritual identity gets stronger inside, from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, in a natural way, our interest or attachment to karma will diminish, will keep coming down. There won't be any attraction for that. Therefore, they give the example also that it is a natural way in spiritual life it happens. When we become more absorbed in the truth, in analyzing, understanding what Krishna has spoken, and in a natural way, if it happens, it is the best. Natural. It cannot be forced on anybody. It has to happen in a natural way. Attraction for the karma will go. So you will notice this, that when one wants to withdraw from karma, Krishna also makes the situation favorable. All Krishna has to do is to take our attraction away from the world. That's all it's required. And then the karma will go. Karma will leave us behind. The very thing we are holding very tight at the moment, that very thing will leave us and go, which is karma. That is the nature of the karma. So, so they give the example I mentioned also last time, that when a girl becomes pregnant, the mother-in-law says to her, now you reduce your workload because you are pregnant, you are carrying the baby. And till the baby, till the pregnancy develops and till the baby is born, she is not given any heavy work to do. And after that, after the baby is born, normally, this is in the olden days. Nowadays, it's not like that anymore. Everyone is in a difference. In the olden days, when families were together, this was the system. When the baby is born, then mother-in-law feels that now somebody has to look after the baby. She realizes that and entrusts that job to the mother fully, isn't it? So the same thing happens, that when Krishna sees that, that we have that desire strongly inside for self-realization, about knowing about the soul, Krishna's presence inside us, Antaryami, all that builds up inside to such a higher level inside, Krishna starts realizing that, take him out from the karma, bring him, give him some relief from the worldly responsibilities and worldly desires. Otherwise, you can see how karma binds people. Isn't it? Krishna has spoken about that in length in the earlier chapters. So when jnanam, when knowledge realizes inside, then his main attraction will be to absorb in that knowledge and enjoy that knowledge, what he has received from Bhagavad Gita. That is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. So many great personalities, if you have seen the realizations they have brought from Bhagavad Gita, simply by absorbing in these words of Krishna, and Krishna from inside guiding them through in their spiritual life. So, once that, that becomes his main engagement, that absorption in the jnanam. When that knowledge also becomes very firmly rooted inside, what happens is, he may do some vyavaharam inside. Like the mother, after the baby is born, she may be cooking in the kitchen, she may be cleaning the house, so many things, but attention is always on the baby. Isn't it? The mother's situation is like that. So, two things goes on simultaneously. In spite of the fact that all the housework has to be done, the attention is always on the baby. That is the state of the jnani at that stage. He'll be doing so many things in this world, but attention is always at the soul, and it's on Krishna inside. Krishna is inside. So just by seeing these things, you can't imitate these things. This all has to happen from within. Sometimes one girl saw another woman becoming pregnant and she thought, I should also become pregnant like that. So she realized that this lady has gone to the hospital and had the baby there. So she decided like that. So when she had the baby, she realized that that lady was getting released from the karma. She has come out of her normal workload, and seeing all that, this lady also decided that I will go to the hospital and have a baby. But it's not going to happen, isn't it? Just by going to the hospital, you're not going to have the child. So many things has to happen before that. So you cannot look at another girl and become pregnant in that way. That is not going to happen. Similarly, that kripa or mercy from Krishna, when that comes inside, it has to fall inside us. That mercy has to fall within us. So that is the biggest thing in spiritual life. When kripa is not happening, then it takes time. So Upanishads, for example, everything is spoken very logically. Upanishads have a lot of logic in that. It is not like Puranam. Upanishads talks with a lot of logic in there. So, and that Upanishad, you will notice in that Upanishads also, rarely Upanishads will say about things which are beyond our control. If you look into Upanishads, these famous words, which is Nayam Alma Pravajanena Labhyaho, Namedhaya Nabhuna Shutena, Yamai Vesha Brunudetena Labhyaha, Tasesham Alma Brunude Tanim Swam. This is the Kathopanishad words. It says, Nayam Alma Pravajanena Labhyoho. That means that just by hearing alone, realization won't come, it says. Pravajanena na Labhyaha. Or by hearing a lot of classes or lectures from so many people, it will not happen, he says. It may not happen. We'll see why it doesn't happen. Then he says, Na medhaya na bhaguna shrutena. You may use all your intelligence and may study all the shastrams and hear from many books also. Still, you won't get it. Yamai vaisha vrunude tena labhyaha. Then it mentions here that whomever has taken shelter of the soul, he will get it. I'll explain that, what it means by that. Yamai vesha vrunude tena labhyaha. That one who has taken shelter of the soul, he will get it, says Kathopanishad. Very firmly it mentions there, tasesham alma vrunude tanim swam. Because soul has to reveal itself to us. You cannot get it.
ഇറ്റ് ഹാസ് ടു റിവീൽ ഇറ്റ് സെൽഫ് ടു അസ് ദിസ് ഈസ് ദി ഡിഫിക്കൽട്ടി ഇൻ സ്പിരിച്വൽ ലൈഫ് അൺലെസ് ഷീ റിവീൽസ് ടു അസ് യു കാൻ്റ് ഹാവ് ഇറ്റ് യു കൻ കീപ് ഓൺ ട്രൈങ് ഡു എവറിഥിങ് വാട്ട് എവർ വിത്ത് യുവർ ബ്രെയിൻ വിത്ത് യുവർ മൈൻഡ് വിത്ത് യുവർ ഫിസിക്കലി വാട്ട് എവർ യു ഹാവ് യു കൻ ഡു സോ മെനി തിങ്സ് ഇൻ ദിസ് വേൾഡ് But this one particular thing, self-realization, is concerned. Tasesham Atma Vivrunade Tanam Swam. That Atma has to reveal itself to us. You can't get it otherwise. This is the hurdle. This is the stumbling block there. You come to a point and then you're stuck there. Tasesham Atma Vivrunade Tanam Swam. Nayam Atma Pravajanina Labhyo Na Medhayana Bahuna Shrutena യമൈവേഷം വൃണുതേ തേൻ അലഭ്യ തസ്യേഷം ആത്മാ വിവൃണതേ തനും സ്വാം വിവൃണതേ തനും സ്വാം സോ ഇഫ് ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് ലൈക്ക് ദാറ്റ് ദെൻ ദ ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ വിൽ കം ഈസ് ദർ നോ മീനിങ് ടു അവർ എഫേർട്ട് ഇൻ സ്പിരിച്വൽ ലൈഫ് ഇഫ് ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് എവറിഥിങ് ഈസ് ഡിപ്പെൻഡൻറ്റ് ഓൺ ദി ട്രേസ് മേഴ്സി അലോൺ ആചാര്യ സ്വാമിജി സേയ്സ് നോ ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് നോട്ട് ലൈക്ക് ദാറ്റ് ബിക്കോസ് എനി സാധക സാധക മീൻ വൺ ഹു ഈസ് പെർഫോമിംഗ് എൻഗേജ് ഇൻ സ്പിരിച്വൽ ലൈഫ് വൺ ഹു ഈസ് പെർഫോമിംഗ് സാധന He is sadhaka. He says that first he has to have that intense burning desire inside for knowledge of the self. For the knowledge of the self. That means he has to completely become surrendered to this principle, Shastram. That soul is inside, Antaryami is there, and I am in a unfortunate situation, in a false state in identification with the body. This has to be very well convinced in self, within oneself. One has to be convinced about that. And he says, and then that intense desire has to burn inside for realizing the truth. In that case, nothing else is important in this world for him, and it should come from the depth of your heart. Depth of your heart. Intellectually, by saying that, or dressing up like any you know, a devotee or a jnani or a yogi or a sannyasi or brahmachari, it is not going to help. Nothing will help. Or in order to convince others that I am in spiritual life, all this is useless. But what it says, those things may or may not be there. That's not important. Most important thing is he says there that we have to be convinced first that adhyatma means relationship with the soul. What is this thing called the soul? That burning desire inside to realize that truth. So long as that doesn't come from inside, it will go on a mental platform or on an intellectual platform. It won't go deeper than that. But you can notice the problem from this, that in the ancient times, those who come to spiritual life, they made kept everything so simple because of this. Because all the attention if you give to the activities of the world, then it is difficult to realize the truth inside. Therefore, they gave us a way of life which is conducive for developing that inner world inside. But difficulty is that most of the time now in the world it is glamour, isn't it? Everything is glamorous now. Everything is so glamorous now that I'm not finding fault with the glamour, but what the problem with this is that a new person who is performing, engaged in sadhana, and he comes to spiritual life, what he sees is this glamour. He sees the glamour. And he starts, what does he think? He thinks that spiritual life means that I have to first become a guru, or I have to have a lot of disciples. All this misunderstanding gets into their head. It's very unfortunate that it is. Without seeing the knowledge that has come from Krishna, the knowledge that the rishis have given to us, instead of absorbing in that and making it as your own, you run after all other kinds of things. You will be running after making disciples and how to become a guru. And if you come to that conviction in life, you won't be able to move even one step further in spiritual life. This is the first problem. You will get stuck there. That's the first stoppage point. You'll get stuck there. That becoming a guru, making disciples, instead of realizing what Krishna has spoken there in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, he has given something most valuable which you can't get anywhere else in this world. Only out of Krishna's compassion to us, he has revealed certain truths to us which is in relationship with ourselves, about us, what he has spoken, isn't it? Krishna has spoken about ourselves, what he has given to us. Instead of taking that seriously and absorbing in that, if all our energy and shraddha and attention has fallen on becoming something in this world, either a guru or this or that, whatever it is, and feeling that this is all the important things in spiritual life, then that person cannot go one step further from there. He will get stuck in that and he will remain in that state. So the thing is that all the Shastram says that suppose your house gets on fire and you are watching the television sitting inside the house, and if you say to him, let me the program be over and I'll come and do what is necessary, you can't do that, isn't it? Can you? In the same way, first of all, to know that there is distress in life. There is distress in life. And I have to find a solution for the distress. This is the where it begins all. To acknowledge that there is distress in life, and the only solution to the problem, he has to come to conclusion that knowledge of the self is the only solution to the problem. I am suffering because of ajnanam, avidya inside me. So I have to acknowledge all these things myself first before talking about it, because it is from this understanding that your attention turns to Bhagavad Gita seriously. Otherwise, it's not going to go. You will be simply reading like another book, Bhagavad Gita. So many books are there in this world. Bhagavad Gita is another one to read through. And you will not find anything in Bhagavad Gita particularly interesting. Only with that background inside. So that is why we are hearing a lot of Bhagavad Gita. We have heard now whole of Ekadasha Skandam quite a bit, isn't it? For so many years we are discussing Ekadasha Skandam. And we have heard Bhagavad Gita so many chapters now. If you ask the question, why nothing is happening? That question is everyone is asking the question, isn't it? Everything looks correct, what has been spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. But when it comes to an experience level, it's not happening. The only reason for that, there is another aspect, which is a very important aspect, which will take us to that state. What is that aspect? Distress. We haven't got the distress stage yet. We are all thinking, somehow life is going on nicely. Money is coming, family life is going on okay. And a little bit of spiritual life added to that, it's fine. That's all how much we want now. But if you really say to Krishna, I want some distress in life so that I can realize this truth, what you are talking about, and Krishna will give it to you. And when Krishna gives it to you, then you will see the beauty of spiritual knowledge. Only in that distressed state, all that what you heard from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, that will come back to you. And you will start showing its power at that time. Now, at the moment, it is on a mental platform or on an intellectual level. It is remaining there. It has not gone in. Why? Because the Shraddha hasn't gone to that level yet. Krishna will force us to create that Shraddha inside, will put us through into such difficulties in life. You don't want anything in this world after that. Simply you want to realize this truth. That stage will come one day. It can happen. Till that happens, this will stay in that level, in that state. There is nothing much you can do about it. Nobody wants distress in life, isn't it? We all want a smooth sail through this life in this world. That's how we are, isn't it? If you look into any great personalities in this world, spiritually realized people we are talking about, you will see what life they went through. They walked through the fire in this world. All family life completely finished. Financially completely bankrupt. Not a penny in the hand. Physically gone through several distresses in life. All this has made them to take Krishna seriously. We won't take Krishna seriously otherwise till something like that comes. So as long as we are saying to Krishna, don't give me trouble, don't give me trouble. And at the same time you want Bhagavad Gita, you want Bhagavad Gita also. It's not something you can get through your intellectual mind, intelligence or mind. Intelligence and mind can't help you. When that serious force that from Krishna's side comes and bashes us from every side in life, and when you are in such a dire distress inside, you will notice all that what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita will come through your thoughts. Continuously it will start coming through. And it will start making you to accept it without any difficulty at that time. So up to that time, you have to keep it here only. There's nothing we can do, because that is the way spiritual life happens to people. That nobody has just studied Bhagavad Gita or memorizing. Nothing. People think that, oh, I didn't study Sanskrit, that's why I'm not able to understand Bhagavad Gita. No, that is not the reason. There are many people who didn't study Sanskrit, they realized the truth. How did that happen to them? Because inside was burning. And Antaryami inside, Krishna inside, has revealed the knowledge to them when it was necessary. When it was necessary, it has come to their rescue. Sanskrit is not important. Sadhana is not important. Nothing is important. More important than anything else is this burning inside. Till we feel that inside, that distress what Krishna puts you through, it can happen. Sometimes the hammer will blow very strongly, and when you get it, then you will know that that's when you say that Krishna's mercy is coming now. But normally, many people, what happens is at that point in time, we start going the opposite way. That Krishna puts you through to make you realize something in life. The nature of this world, Krishna is saying, anityam asukham lopam imam prapyabhijasvama. But we won't take it seriously. We will simply think, oh yeah, Krishna said like that, so what? I'm alright, Jack. That's our mood, isn't it? So that is not spiritual side. So this is where we have to understand Bhagavad Gita, that in order that Bhagavad Gita has to work, we do so many things. We think that Sanskrit language is not, I have not studied, that's why I'm not able to understand Bhagavad Gita properly. That is an illusion. Similarly, sometimes we think maybe the person who is telling me is not realized, that is why it's not happening. So we go to other people and ask about these things. But in spiritual life, ultimately, the responsibility is on our own head. It is wrong to think somebody else is going to do it for us. Nobody is going to do it for us. It will go on like this. You can dance in this world whichever way you like it. But at the end, if you don't do it yourself, it's not going to happen. That is the simple truth in the spiritual side. So, but every time what we say, oh, there is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so merciful, is going to give us so much mercy. Krishna is more merciful. My spiritual master is merciful. They are all merciful. If you ask them, what is your mercy? He'll say, look, it's there in the Bhagavad Gita. You take the mercy from there. Given it to you, everything. It's there. But that's not the only thing we don't want to do. We want somebody to come and sort out our problems and go. That's not going to happen. Because in spiritual life, this one, Krishna is saying to us that this one knowledge, Krishna, otherwise what was the need for Bhagavad Gita if everything was completely like that? It wasn't, isn't it? So every great personality, you will see that either they have burned themselves inside completely, and Krishna, out of his Kripa, has come to them in the form of this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, or they had such a good intelligence. That is the beauty of the Acharya's case. They had such great intelligence that they were able to surrender completely to Krishna and completely in Krishna's mercy to live in this world, which is exceptional cases. Exceptional cases. But normally in spiritual life, this is the only way it comes to some fruition. It comes to some benefit in that way. So, so here, first thing is to recognize that there is distress in this world. And also this realization that I have to take shelter of this Bhagavad Gita's knowledge for that and realize the self. And when I take that decision, Antaryami from inside take control of me. If I take that decision, but I have to take that decision that Antaryami inside is controlling everything. It is Antaryami's desire, Antaryami's plan that is happening in my life, everything, whatever is coming, good or bad. And not getting too absorbed in that, but seeing that distress, what is experienced in life, and taking that shelter. In the Bhagavatam, how that is spoken. Let's look at that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look, Rukmini Devi sent a message to Krishna, isn't it? Bhagavatam, it is spoken in the story form. That is all it is. But if you read the message, you will see this. Rukmini says to Krishna that Rukmini first took Krishna's shelter. And then Krishna says to the Brahmana who brought the message, now she has taken my shelter, I have to take control of her. This is, you will see there in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, 52nd chapter.
how these are the important things in the Bhagavatam. We seeing that our Rukmini, not such a nice marriage Krishna and Rukmini had. If you look into the 10th canto, 52nd chapter. Verse 37. Rukmini vacha. Rukmini is saying, Shrutvan gunan bhuvana sundara shrunu adante nirvishya karna vivare harado angatabham rupam drisham drishimadam akhilarthalabham toyachuda vishadi chittamapatrapam me. This was the first verse, and there is only about 43. That means there is about 7 verses. The message is 7 verses from Rukmini to Krishna. All the 7 verses is a spiritual message. It's not just the story alone. Rukmini is a very intelligent person. Mahalakshmi herself, isn't it? She says, Shrutva gunan bhuvana sundara shrunvatam te nirvishya karna vivare haradam gatabam rupam drisham drishimadam akhilartha labham toy achyuda avishadi chittam apatrapam me. Toy achyuda avishadi chittam apatrapam me. She says to Krishna. In other words, when the jiva, conditioned soul, when the jiva takes the takes shelter of the andaryami inside, then when our intelligence, our mind, and everything in us wants to know about our identity, swarupam. Varanam means, to translate that properly in English, is when you take as the everything in life, when you take something as everything in life, that is called varanam. That means as your firm decision in life, this is what I want, that is called varanam. So when jiva takes the decision that atma is the most important thing, realizing this self as the most important thing, and you will see that when the body, mind, intelligence, everything is in that direction, a very mysterious force will start coming from inside. And you can see that yourself if you come to that state of inquiry, spiritual inquiry. Because it is very difficult to rationally explain that, or logically to explain that, how it happens, it is inexplicable, in other words, in spiritual life. Particularly in the Vedantam, it is very difficult to explain that. In Vedantam, generally, everything is very logical. For example, in relationship with our subtle body, transmigration of the soul, the acts of karmam, all other things is logically explained in the Vedantam. If you read the text in the Vedantam, very much detail explained in those sides, or those aspects of it. But everything is logical and rational there. But you will notice this also when you study the Vedantic texts. You will notice that it is very much logical. That is why it attracts people with a lot of intelligence. It's attracted by that. But in this one particular thing, they have left a gap there. As far as this is concerned, they cannot explain that, where that is coming from the Andaryami. Because that completely depends on how serious we are in these things. That is what that is Kathopanishad is talking about. Yamai Vesha Vrunade Tena Labhyaha. That means that mercy alone, that Kripa, or Krishna's mercy, that phenomenon is difficult. Intellectually, you can't explain that. You can't explain that intellectually, because that kripa or mercy is the power of the soul. It's coming from the soul itself. You see, power of the soul. So, devatma shakti. Upanishad says devatma shakti. So, that devatma shakti is the one that helps us in our adhyatma sadhana. In spiritual life, when you're executing sadhana, that devatma shakti, the same power, that sense that kripa or grace shows to us, it's the same power that gives us the support in our sadhana. When we come to spiritual life, initially we start with a lot of enthusiasm, isn't it? A lot of enthusiasm in the beginning.
After a while, the enthusiasm fades. We start thinking, all questions start coming, doubts start coming, and we start wavering. How long this question will come? So, but what keeps us going then? It is this kripa or this power that comes from the soul. That's what is keeping us going. So, actually, there is no need to be worried that, oh, I don't have a spiritual master and things like that. Because once this desire comes inside, and if the intention, if the desire is strong inside, the soul from within will release this power. Devatma Shakti, as Upanishads calls that, it will start coming from inside. And it will create a favorable situation inside as well as outside. Inside as well as outside. From outside, what it will do, it will turn your attention inwards. Andarmukha. Mind will go inward looking. And from inside, it will keep the mind under control without too much chittavritti coming in. Or too much chittavritti coming in. So, devatma, that is a symptom of that. This you will notice in the people who are progressing very fast in spiritual life, how they become, get released from the karma first. Secondly, the attention in the world goes away. And third thing, from inside itself, the chittam or mind is in such a state that nothing is disturbing them anymore, because all the attention has gone into the spiritual life inside. So as far as a person who is performing sadhana is concerned, so there will be an intense yearning for that. Intense yearning for that inside. Not earning, yearning. Not intense earning, but intense yearning for that. So in the modern world, in spiritual life, the instruction is given based on the earning, isn't it? Based on your earning power, everything is based on that. But here, the intense thirst or intense hunger for that. Intense thirst or hunger for that. In other words, inside us, in order to realize that truth, if you have that intense sangalpam, that intense, firmly rooted desire inside, if it builds up, then yogis call this as kundalini shakti. You don't have to get worried about these words, because process is one, but when we explain it, it is different ways it is spoken. Yogis call it as kundalini shakti. What is kundalini shakti? It is this power that is coming from inside, from the soul. So, sometimes when you say kundalini shakti, people will start imagining themselves, or some kind of snake starting from the bottom of the from the spine. It starts building up and it starts flowing up. Because you'll see pictures like that depicted in the different books, in the yoga texts, Patanjali's Yoga Sutram and all. If you see, you'll notice there, it's spoken like that the something starts rising from the bottom of the spine and it starts going up through different chakras and it shows flowing like this. And so people start thinking, oh, there's something going to rise from the bottom. That's not what it meant. That kundalini shakti, what the yogis call it, in Yanamargam, they call it as this dehalma shakti, which comes from the soul. A power from inside start working. Not from outside, from inside it starts working in everybody. So, so what happens is that these words, kundalini shakti, they are practically like poetical expressions, that is. We also call it as chit shakti. Chit shakti is another word used for that. Or in a devotee's terminology, it is kripa shakti. Jnani's plural says it is chit shakti. In the devotee's language, it is kripa shakti. In the yogi's language, it is kundalini shakti. The shakti is the one, same shakti. But in three different ways, it's not that three different processes, completely different. They are one and the same thing. All of them are coming from the same source, from the soul, from the soul. So, the only explanation to that power, that shakti, is that this jiva inside, the aham, what we identify with, ahanda or ego inside, what it does is, without allowing the mind to go in its shraddha, get scattered in the world, what it does is, that it brings that whole Shraddha in one direction. That's what it does. It brings it into one direction and it gets intense inside and it becomes one energy inside. That means outside we have a Shraddha. Everybody has Shraddha. The only problem with the Shraddha is it gets scattered in so many other things in this world. What this Devatma Shakti does is, or Kundalini Shakti or Chit Shakti, what it does is, it brings the all these scattered Shakti together and not allow the mind to go to other things in this world and takes the attention away from that and brings it into this one direction of the realization of the self. And it will start allowing that Shakti to rise inside. And it is when you start rising, that is when the yogis call it as Kundalini. Kundalini they call it. So, so the Devatma Shakti, as it is called here, people imagine that is what is put it in that pictorial form, which you see in the Bhagavadam also, they have put that in a pictorial form, how the Kundalini rises through the spine and it comes to Sahasraram and it leaves the head here and goes away. So it's spoken in that way in the yoga system, in that way it is presented. So when Krishna is saying here in this verse, Tasmal Sarveshu Kaleshu Mam Anusmara Yudhyaja Mai Arpita Mano Buddhi. See that word? Mai Arpita Mano Buddhi. That is what that means. Only when this happens, my Arpita Mano Buddhi will be there. My Arpita Mano Buddhi. So, my Arpita Mano Buddhi means when your mind and intelligence, everything has gone into the hands of that Kripa Shakti, which is coming from inside. At that point, and all your activities also, not only mind and intelligence, my Arpita Mano Buddhi plus all your karma also, all your activities with the body, which is the karma. Karma means all the activities of the body, isn't it? So all the activities of the body, the mind and the intelligence, everything, when it falls into the hands of that Kripa Shakti or Chit Shakti, at that point we are liberated. That's what Krishna is saying there. Tasmal Sarveshu Kaleshu Mam Anusmara Yudhyaja Mai Arpita Mano Buddhi Mam Eveshyasi Asamshaya. Krishna says, you have reached that state. That means your hand, the body, mind, intelligence, everything has become in Krishna's hands. Krishna is controlling that. And that Shakti which takes control of everything, which is called as Kripa Shakti or Chit Shakti or the Devatma Shakti or Kundalini, whatever way you may call it, the source of that is this Antaryami inside. The soul inside, which is Krishna's manifestation within. From there is that force. He'll come and take over everything, and then everything what happens is Krishna doing it, not us anymore. Ahankaram has no role anymore there. Ahankaram has withdrawn. Krishna has taken control of everything. That is what he is saying here. So, once that reach that state of yoga, yoga sthiti, if it comes there, without losing that, they will be able to execute karmam in this world without losing that state inside. That means, completely conscious that Krishna is doing everything inside and body will be doing the karmam. Body will be doing the karmam. It is not that something you can achieve by artificial spiritual practice. You can't do that artificially by spiritual practice, because this has come from a much deeper level. From a much deeper level. There, that's why it's called avabhodham. From avabhodham that is coming. That is why it's not something that you can practice it on a spiritual level. So at that stage what happens is, whatever Krishna's mercy, Bhagavad Kripa, that Kripa will do what is necessary to be done. It will do that. That force that's coming, it will do through the body what it has to do. That will decide what has to be done through the body. So, this Kripa or Kripa Shakti, what we call in the devotee's language, or Chit Shakti in the Jnani's language, or Kundalini Shakti in the yogi's language, whichever way we address that, that power has to come and fall on us from Krishna's side. It has to come and forcefully take control of us. Forcefully, it has to take control of us. When will that happen? That will happen when inside is burning. It is not burning at the moment. Everything is on here. Everything what we hear, we read Bhagavad Gita, we study Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, and everything is fantastic. Krishna has spoken so many wonderful things about the truth, isn't it? Truth he has presented to us in the most logical and rational and sensible way one can think of. You can't think anything better than the way Krishna has spoken in the Ekadasha Skandam or in the Bhagavad Gita. Everything looks very logical, very sensible, not blaspheming, blasting anybody else, simply speaking the truth direct to us. Is it not? That is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. And you don't have to blaspheme anybody, don't have to criticize anyone. This is the truth. And he says to Arjuna, Arjuna, this is the situation, take it or leave it. That's the way Krishna has spoken. Isn't it? And having presented all that, and hearing all these things, we understand and says, yes, it all makes sense what Krishna has spoken, but nothing is happening inside. Why is not happening? This is the reason behind it. That varanam, that surrender, whichever we address it that way, that this is what I want in life, that hasn't happened yet. At the moment, for us, everything else is important, and that importance has not gone away yet from inside the rest of the world. We like it like this, everything at the moment, because we are still frightened that if we lose all these things, what will happen? If I lose my job, what will happen? If I lose my house, what will happen? If I lose my family, what will happen? But when one day, when Krishna feels that we are ready for it, he will take the family away, he will take the house away, he will take the money away. And then, like Prabhupada said himself, all that remains is a list of names. He said, isn't it? That's what he wrote. He said, all that remains is a list of names at the end. That is when that Kripa Shakti flows freely then. Then everything what he does says, Krishna is doing through that body, it doesn't matter to him anymore. What is Ahangaram is not doing. Up to that time, we will be attracted by the glamour of this world. So many things in this world, isn't it? So therefore, it says here that in order that to happen, sometimes mother beats the child, isn't it? Even only if you beat the child will get better. So mother is beating the child. So Krishna also will beat us. Krishna has to beat us. But when he beats us, we need the strength to bear it. That is the problem. So, and also to know that it is Krishna's beating us. Krishna is beating us. You can look at any great devotees, how Krishna has beaten them. He has beaten them so harsh. And only when they were beaten, the only good thing, fortune they had was Krishna has given them strength also to bear it, to bear that beating. Imagine we have some health today in this body. Krishna has taken it away tomorrow. What's our situation in this world? Isn't it? The whole world life is over then. You just stay there in the bed looking for when is this going to end. That stage can happen. It happens all the time in life. Every day we are witnessing this. Is it not? And or things can happen that some you have developed a situation, family life, relationships with wife, children, parents and all that. In one stroke the whole thing can collapse. Relationships can break very easily. It can happen. So many things can happen within our life. But till that happens, we won't know it. We'll think that it will work. Somehow it will go on like this. And we'll live in that illusion. Is it not? So that is the important thing. So that means Kripa Shakti is not coming yet. Now if you go and start saying to Krishna from tomorrow that please give me some lot of distress so let me realize Bhagavad Gita, he will very happily give it to you if you are genuinely asking for it. And when he starts giving it to you, then you shouldn't say it to him. You'll say, you've asked for it, I've given it to you. So that will be the answer from Krishna's side. Krishna's side, that power we should have to bear it when he beats us like that. So just like we use the sandpaper, isn't it, to make the surface smooth. Similarly, that Kripa, the force that comes from Krishna it has to rub us a lot so that this ego inside will get completely cleaned up. Ego is the one that you have to wipe it off. Like with the sandpaper, you make the surface better, isn't it? To paint or to make it smoother, to do something. Similarly, Krishna has to give us this sandpaper to rub on our false ego a little bit. Because this is the false ego that is keeping us attached to all these things. There is nothing else. From the Shastram, what they are telling us, it is our false ego that is keeping us attached to so many things in this world. So these parents, they will beat the child, bring them up, and then they will give all the wealth to the child, isn't it, when they leave the world. So a similar situation like this. So, what is our wealth in this world? So, that is Krishna's wealth. What Krishna gives it to us is that Krupa. That mercy is the Krupa. So no many ways it is expressed by the great devotees, Alwars, Nayanmars, and many other Maharashtrian saints. They have all spoken about this. All the great devotees, they have spoken about this. And only one who has got that beating, he knows what it's like, that beating is. Like we read Sudama's story in the Bhagavatam. But when you read the story, Krishna's greatest devotee has to stay without food days after days. Nothing to eat. Whole family suffering without any food. Yes. So what do you think about that? When you see that, and Sudama was able to bear it, isn't it? How come? How could he do that? So that is that Krupa. You can see that Krupa coming through Sudama in that way. Krishna's mercy is coming through, flowing through him. In spite of all that, able to bear that strength. That is the mercy, Krupa. Krishna's Krupa, that is. So now we understand what Krupa means, isn't it? When all the miseries Krishna is forcing upon us, and in spite of all that, able to hold on to Krishna's lotus feet. That is Krishna's Krupa. If the Krupa is not there, it won't happen. Suppose somebody who does not take care of anything in Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, who lives in this world, and suddenly all these miseries have come to him, what will happen to him? He'll go to alcohol or to drugs or something else. That will be his shelter. Normally that's what we see in this world, isn't it? Go through another series of miseries before coming to senses. But very intelligent devotees, very intelligent people, they have sensed this from the very early days in life, and without caring for anything in this world, they went for it. That is what they have done. That, of course, with exceptional cases. Very exceptional cases, they have done that. But normally, those who have come to spiritual life with some understanding, they will come to realize this, that when Krishna's grace and Krupa, mercy is coming from inside, that mercy will take care of everything else, and that will give the impetus to surrender more, to move away from the platform of the ego. So this, what they are saying here, that you will see at that point how that Krupa's power, you will start observing at that time. And that power of that Krupa or mercy, that itself is the realization of the self. Because it's from the self, it's coming. And that brings that shanti or peace inside. When it starts manifesting inside, what you are actually seeing is your swarupam, your real identity, what you are. This spiritual experience is an amazing thing. As we mentioned before also, what we will deal with in this world today is only 5% of what we know about us. The mind, intelligence, body, senses, ego and all that, hardly 5% of the what we are actually inside. The soul, which has got, you have got this name Anantam. Another name for the soul is Anantam, isn't it? So Anantam, you will see that why this word Anantam means? Anantam means unlimited it is. Unlimited. In other words, the world of the soul is unlimited. It is far beyond what we see through the senses, mind and intelligence. Only thing is, because we haven't experienced it, we are stuck with this 5% here. And we are playing with it this way, that way, trying to find some happiness within this 5% of the soul's manifestation in this world. So even then, after this realization, even after that, if the thoughts are coming and causes a interruption inside, that person will start realizing that between the thoughts, that Swarupam will come out. What we saw in the Bhagavatam 7th canto. You remember that? In the 7th canto, what we spoke about before, this is, you may ask me the question, why I'm saying all this is nothing is happening to us. Between two thought waves, Krishna is there. Bhagavatam is saying to us. Bhagavatam is saying to us, if you look at the 7th canto, you will see there, in the, yes. Yeah, 13th chapter. Dattatreya Maharshi and Prahlada is talking to each other. Dattatreya and Prahlada is talking to each other. Narada Maharshi is saying this to Yudhishthira. Suptam prabhodayo santho atmanogati atmadrak pashyan bandham cha moksham cha maya matram na vastuta. Pure Vedantam it is. It says, Supta prabhodayo santho. Suptam and prabhodam. Supta means deep sleep state. Prabhodam means vacant state. Junction of that. Of that. We don't take notice of that, do we? When we come out of this sleep, what do we say? Oh, I was in a good sleep, but I lost it now. Now I got up. What can I do? Cursing ourselves, we get up. And then the vacant state starts. Once the vacant state starts, then we are worried about the vacant world of the vacant state. Narada Maharshi is saying, Supta Prabhodaya Sandho, in that sandhi, in that junction, Atmano Gadi Atmadrika, that Atmano Gadi Atmadrika means one is looking for the soul, Atmadrik. Or Atmano Gadi, you should notice what's happening inside at that time. That's what he's saying here. Inside what's happening at that time, Atmano Gadi Atmadrika. Pashyan, he will see, bandham cha moksham cha maya matram na vastuda. How do we understand that? Bandham and moksham is maya matram na vastuta. It's a beautiful explanation to vacant state or bondage and liberation. What has happened? Imagine this. In the deep sleep state, you had no body, you had no mind, you had no intelligence, you had no ego, and you felt happy. You felt extremely happy in the deep sleep state. That is a state, moksham. Moksham state is that. And you came to the vacant state, what happened? All of these came back, body, mind, intelligence, ego, and you fallen into the grip of time and space, and you felt the bondage. Isn't it? So, Narada Maharshi is saying, if you want to see bondage and liberation, all you have to do is to look into the deep sleep state and the vacant state and that junction when it happened. That suddenly from a liberated state, you have come to the bondage state. See that? Pashyan, bandham cha mokshan cha maya. And also what do you see? You realize it that maya matram, it is all caused by maya that this has happened. Both this state of liberation, what you felt in the deep sleep, and this bondage that you felt in the vacant state, maya matram, na vastuta, they are not real. They are not real. That's the point he is driving at. That's not real at all. So, deep sleep state to junction. That similarly also, Upanishad says, equally between thought waves, Krishna comes. Between thought waves, Krishna comes. We don't take notice of that, and therefore, it mentions there that when we come to this state that Krishna started working from within, that Kripa Shakti starts coming from Antaryami. From inside, what will happen is that even between the thought waves, you will start noticing that Kripa Shakti coming in between, between the thought waves. Now, one thought wave comes and we get identified with that thought wave and we become that. The next moment that thought wave goes away, next thought wave comes, we identify with that, isn't it? But between the two thought waves, Krishna comes. Krishna comes. And this we have to accept now purely on the strength of the Shastram. That's all you can do. But because they are realized personalities are speaking, they are telling us that it is like this, one day when we also come to that stage, we will realize that this is all the truth, what they have spoken to us. So when it happens that you cannot forget your Swarupam, identity, completely, and fully woken up to your Atmaswarupam. Atmaswarupam means your spiritual identity. Then, even when he is performing Vyavaharam in this world, even after this realization all happens, still there will be Vyavaharam in this world because the body is there. What can you do? There will be Vyavaharam will happen in this world. But at that stage, without losing that Smriti inside and that Anubhavam or experience inside, if without losing that, Krishna is saying, and if Vyavaharam is happening still with that person, he is a perfect yogi. He is a perfect yogi. So that's why you will notice that so many people, that when they teach yoga processes in this world, like you had this transcendental meditation and all Mahesh Yogi's programs and all that. So one devotee asked him to one sannyasi, what is this transcendental meditation? He says that I only know dental meditation, he said, but I don't know transcendental meditation what is. Because when the tooth is aching, dental problems once you have, so whatever you try, your mind will go into the teeth straight away, isn't it? Mind will go into the teeth. So you cannot forget it. So similarly, in this world, whatever vyavaharam one has to do according to our prarabdham, because it's prarabdham that's keeping us busy in vyavaharam also. Sometimes you see some people, they are extremely busy in this world. And the way they are working and running around in the world, when you look at it, you think they have to turn the whole world upside down. The amount of effort they are putting into this world. And not forgetting that, at least 3/4 of our mind is presence in Krishna, then that is this meditation what is spoken about, that is the best meditation. That is the best meditation. That is what Krishna is saying in that verse. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasa ananya gaminam. If you look at that verse, that is the verse number 8. We are discussing this last Saturday also. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasa ananya gaminam paramam purusham divyam yadi parthanu chindayan. We are slowly coming into this verse. Krishna is saying there, Abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasa ananya gaminam. He says that abhyasa chedasa ananya gaminam paramam purusham divyam yadi parthanu chindayan. Paramam purusham divyam abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasa ananya gaminam paramam purusham divyam yadi parthanu chindayan. Look at that verse again. I'll read the translation first. Krishna is saying, he who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, Arjuna, is sure to reach me. Isn't it? Sure to reach me. That means, now when you read that verse, if you take that verse on its own, what will you understand? You will think, I have to sit in the meditational pose and start thinking about Krishna, completely focused on Krishna and not allowing any other thoughts to come in. That won't work. That's what Krishna is saying. That's why before we come to that verse, the previous verses have its impact. You have to take that into account. Because when Krishna said, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu ma manusmara yudhyaja ma yarpida manobuddhir ma maveshis yasamshaya. The person who has understood that verse properly and that is being followed, that's what is happening to him. So then this constant remembrance will happen to him. And what will happen to him is that even though he may be doing very vyavaharam in this world, these thoughts of Krishna or the soul will be undercurrent inside. There will be an undercurrent inside. These are stages Krishna is saying will happen to that person. That means when we have woken up inside, when the eye inside has opened, there is another eye, we call it the third eye inside. In the yogi's language, they call it as third eye. It is the third eye that opens up. That is when the transcendental knowledge starts working. That Kripa Shakti comes from Krishna, Chit Shakti or Kundalini Shakti, whichever we call it. When that Shakti starts operating from inside, what will happen is that this, even though Vyavaharam is going on in this world, still as an undercurrent, this knowledge of the soul will be flowing through all the time. And at that stage, you don't particularly need any sadhana. Sadhana is not necessary at that stage, because that stage itself is chanting. Itself is a chanting process, because chanting will happen in a natural way in that person. He will chant the holy name without any external effort. Because you can see here that of all the process what we perform, sadhana is the, chanting is the easiest process. There is no doubt about that. So other processes are difficult. Take for example deity worship. To do proper deity worship, it's very difficult. Deity worship, you can do a show to others that I am doing deity worship. You can throw a lot of money on deity worship and tell the world that we are doing deity worship in the highest level. But the proof of deity worship is that changing the person who is doing the deity worship. That's where the proof is, isn't it? So there are so many other processes, meditation and other things, whatever you can do, Sankirtanam, so many things you can do, but nothing is as effective and easy as chanting the holy name, as chanting the holy name. So when this undercurrent becomes stronger inside, this Nama Japam, chanting the holy name, will also go along with it. We will not be able to stop it. It will continue in a powerful way. That chanting will continue very strongly inside. And that is the Japa Sadhana, as they mentioned that. So it is practicing, it's easy. And we may say like this, we'll say practicing is very easy. And propagation is also easy. But only chanting on your own is finding difficult. For us, that is the problem, isn't it? Prabhupada says that chant 16 rounds. After 16 rounds, we take the beats back, tie it down strongly. Boom. Gone there. I've done my bit today. And then this is the attention we have in the, because you can't blame anybody for that, because that undercurrent inside hasn't come yet. Or that force, that Kripa Shakti, Krishna's Kripa Shakti, or the Chit Shakti, what has to pull us into it, it hasn't happened yet. That is why it is in that state. So similarly, everybody is taking initiations. We are also taking initiations all the time. But if in order that it has to become effective, it has to become effective. If it were so simple, if I walk onto the street, it will all be liberated souls should be working around everywhere. But we don't see that, isn't it? The whole world is chanting Hare Krishna now due to propaganda and preaching and everything, isn't it? Lot of people are chanting, no doubt. But it is not that simple. We know that after chanting a while, as it happened that they got liberated. No, it hasn't happened yet. So they are on the right track, but there is a long way to go still. That has to be recognized. That has to be recognized. So so sadhana is simple, but at the same time we need to know that the continuous process has to develop inside that chanting process. So when we do that, one, we can see normally when we chant the holy name, if you take seriously for 6 months or a year, if you chant very seriously, you will know how the impurities from inside is coming out. Your own impurities. Our own impurities will start coming out. Lust, anger, greed, and envy, and pride, all these kind of things will start coming out. And once it start coming out, we'll stop chanting. That's what happens, isn't it? So so this chanting itself is a big tapasya. It's a tapasya itself. So for people will ask this question, is it not enough if I just chant?
That will be the question. Most of the time people ask this question. So, do I have to study this Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and all that? It's not sufficient if I just chant all the time. It says, yes, the answer is yes, you don't have to study Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. But if you chant properly, you will know Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam without studying the books. You will get to know, but you won't do it. That's the problem. You won't be able to do it. That is why all this Satsangam, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, what it does is, it gives us a push from outside. It gives us a push to go in that direction. So if you perform Nama Japam perfectly, and there are people who still do it perfectly well in this world, and Anusyutam means uninterrupted, continuously, all the time, then this will happen. This will have, because that means that Kripa Shakti, Krishna's Kripa Shakti or Chit Shakti has started working inside them. That's what it means. That they have come to that state that all interest has gone away in this world and continuously able to chant the holy name. As an undercurrent, it is flowing through all the time. Without, they don't even know that they are chanting. Chanting has become a part of themselves itself. they become like that. And this you can see. In the freedom movement, when Gandhiji was fighting for the freedom, you could see he mentioned something very interesting things. If you read his autobiography, you will see there. Then, when he performed all the activities, even during the independence movement, he was engaged in the karmam in a yogasthiti. He mentions that. He doesn't say exactly that way. What he says there is that karmam did not pull him down. In our case, what happens? Karmam takes complete control of us, isn't it? You remember, there was this, what is known as the Satyagraha movement for salt. Salt, because at that time, what happened was, there is restrictions on the manufacturing salt. Because due to the war situation, the British government at that time decided to restrict the supply of salt, and so many shortages for various things in the country. So, protesting against that, Gandhiji wanted to have what is known as salt satyagraham, they call it, for the salt. There's a famous Dandi Yatra and all that. Gandhiji walked with a lot of his followers towards the sea to manufacture salt, I mean, defying the orders of the government. It was non-cooperation program, wasn't it? Not to cooperate with the government and everything. So, at that time, what happened was, he said that Gandhiji was used to chanting the holy name, Ramanam, Ramachandra's name, he chanted very sincerely all the time. So, when he was a child, Gandhiji hasn't studied Shastram very much. That you have to know, that he has, if you read the autobiography, he himself says that, I didn't have the time to study Bhagavad Gita and all. He took it seriously after he started the freedom movement, when the government started putting him into the prison. When he had a lot of time, he became serious about Bhagavad Gita. He had the elementary understanding of Bhagavad Gita, but more than that, he had all his faith in the holy name. More faith in the holy name, Ramchandra's name. So he chanted that, and somebody gave him the instruction when he was a little boy to chant these two letters, Ra, Ma. He chanted that very well. So those people who traveled with Gandhiji at that time, Mahadev Deshai and many others who were with him, they mentioned this very nicely. They say, Gandhiji was going towards the sea. He was older than everybody else. But the way he was walking, he was so fast. Gandhiji says, I did not know what the body was doing. Because that yoga sthiti inside, karma yogam, what is does, that's what he had great impact on his life, isn't it? So the impact of karma was such in him that although he was fighting all these things, organizing massive rallies and organizing the whole country against the government at that time for the independence movement, all those things were going on, but he mentions this, that was my prarabdham, he says. Just see how he looked at the, normally in a person who is so absorbed in the world outside, imagine independence movement means organizing so many people and fighting against the government, which is not easy, wasn't it? So, but he says there at that time, Gandhi says at that time that I did not know that I was walking so fast. Others were struggling hard to keep up with him. They couldn't walk with him because he was so fast walking.
And they were saying, where is he getting all this energy from? He wasn't eating anything. He was fasting most of the time. The stomach is, he was looked very much like Sudama at that time in that sense. That he was walking so fast and others were finding it difficult to keep up with him. That is that Kripa Shakti inside, spiritual energy flowing from inside. So and they interviewed Gandhiji later. Gandhiji says to him that all I know is the first step I put my feet on. After that, what happened, I do not know. Then body was walking, body was taking the salt from the sea. Nothing I knew. But Gandhiji was fixed on the two letters, Ra, Ma, those two letters. So, body has gone there and done something and came back. That is how Gandhiji sees that. What do we say? We say that Gandhi has fought for the freedom movement very seriously and therefore we got the freedom and all that. But Gandhiji was not at all absorbed in that way in the freedom movement. He was more on the spiritual side. He lived his life and freedom movement he simply considered as a prarabdham that has come through that body. See how the great Mahatma see life. They don't look at it like a organized. They were not organizing for the sake of the body. They was not even conscious that he was. That is why he was, because he was doing it in a yoga state. Therefore, without enmity, he was able to do it properly in the way. So if you look at it in the same way, for those who are followers of Sankhya philosophy, in the Bhagavad Gita, the main Siddhantam is Sankhya. That is known thing. That's why you will see there the second chapter, Prabhupada is translated as contents of Bhagavad Gita summarized, but it's actually Sankhya it is. Sankhya Yoga it is. The whole, you can see the many verses where Krishna starts the Bhagavad Gita with to Arjuna. That is Sankhya itself. So, in the Sankhya philosophy, you are not for the world. World is for you. It's a little interesting, isn't it? We are all thinking we are for the world. But Sankhyam says, Kapila Maharshi says to us, you are not for the world. World is for you. World is for you. Not in the selfish sense. It's not spoken in the selfish sense. You have to understand that very clearly. World is there for you to get released from here. The world is there for us to get released from here, not to come back here. If you utilize this world properly, and if I become free from this world, and what do we have to do? We have to utilize this world, and if I release myself from this world, escape from this world, what do we have to do? And we have to know the truth behind this world, isn't it? Suppose if you become selfish, those who are selfish, they will say that everything in this world is meant for my enjoyment. That's what the selfish person thinks, isn't it? Everything in this world is for my enjoyment. If you look at it from the Vedantam side, how the Vedantic point of view, if you ask that question, this whole world is for me to get myself released from here. How? That's the question. That means that this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, if you want to apply, the world is the right place to apply. World is the right place to apply. In other words, to do it in such a way that all that what we do, if it becomes a worship of the living entities in this world, Jagata Pujanam, worship of the other living entities in this world. In other words, knowing very well that this manifested world is nothing but Krishna's presence, another presence here, and to worship everything in this world in that way. That is the Jagata Pujanam. Mentions that in the Jagata Pujanam, Jagata Ishadhi Yukta Sevanam, Ashtamurtibhu Deva Pujanam. Jagata Ishadhi Yukta Sevanam. That means to know very well that this world, what is Krishna's another manifestations, is an opportunity to utilize for self-realization, how to realize the truth. This is an opportunity given to us. And that is the way great personalities have looked at this world. Everybody, if you look at it, we may think that this is coming from the bhakti point of view now. From bhakti point of view, we will misunderstand. We will think, let the world go to hell. If I can escape from here, it will not happen. Before Krishna gives us that clearance from here, he will make sure that we see this world as Krishna's another manifestation. Otherwise, it won't happen. That is very important. That is why, if you look into Bhagavadam, first class devotee, who is it? Sarva bhudeshu yap pashyet bhagavad bhavam altmana bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. It didn't say any deity, it didn't say any form. What did it say? First class devotee is that person who is seeing Krishna everywhere. Isn't it? It's not that everybody will become Krishna. When I start looking through my glasses, one Krishna is sitting here, another Krishna is sitting there. That is not what it means. It's completely on a spiritual level, it is, to be understood that verse. Sarva bhudeshu yap pashyet bhagavad bhavam. And that is what that is. So you can see there itself that bhakti, if you misunderstood, what will you say? Oh, I have my own bhakti, I've got my own deities at home. You can do what you like, but I got my own deities and I worship my deity. I'm not bothered what happens. They are all karmis, they're gone anyway. I'm not going to bother about them. All this kind of thinking will build up inside, within us. It will be easy to build up that understanding. So in order to come out of that, first thing what Krishna is saying also, that all living entities in this world are Krishna's manifestation, is there in them. Till we recognize and we come to terms with it, we won't get the release from here. It's not going to happen. That's the point. So therefore, it means to know that Krishna's presence in another living entity is not easy, is it? It's not easy to see that Krishna is present in everyone, everybody, everyone whom we come to know in this world. And if we have to see that Krishna is present inside, or if I start looking, is Krishna present inside that person? If I don't see, then I say, oh no, Krishna is not there in him. So, it's not easy. Because sometimes what will happen is, you'll start looking at someone. When you look at somebody, what's the first thing? Ragadvesham will come from inside. Somebody whom you like, you'll say, yes, maybe Krishna is in him because you like him. In somebody else you don't like, you say, there is no chance of Krishna being inside that person. How can it be there in him? This is, ragadvesham will dictate everything from inside, isn't it? We keep on looking at everybody in this world in this way. What will happen at the end? We will leave this world in the same state. But Krishna is saying to us, till you have come out of this, looking through ragadvesham into this world, this is not going to happen. That is why every person we come into contact into this world, you have to know he is a devata. He is a, the coming verses are directing in this direction. He is taking us in this direction. To come to this understanding that Krishna is present in the whole creation, what do we have to do? Every person we have to see as a deity. He is a deity or a devata in this world. So to realize the inner self, to realize the inner self. Ajari Swamiji mentions this in the Dakshinamurti. When you study that, we will see this. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari. He begins with that. He says, Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari. World is like a mirror. World is like a mirror. Just like, suppose, if you want to shave yourself, you want to shave your beard or something, if you shave in the mirror, it won't do help. You have to shave yourself, isn't it? You look into the mirror, but you have to shave here. But suppose you say, if I shave the image in the mirror, it won't work, will it? Same thing. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari. If you first thing is, if you want to see that person inside here, Antaryami, Krishna's presence inside, that thing is reflecting in all the other bodies in this world. That same Antaryami inside me is reflecting in all the bodies, in all living entities in this world. That understanding, first thing. Then, this realization of Antaryami inside will happens. When that happens, you realize the Antaryami's presence in all the other living. First, the understanding that it is the same Antaryami which is inside me is present in everyone else. Sarva bhudeshu yap pashyet bhagavad bhavam almana. That's what that means. That bhagavad bhavam in everyone. Sarva bhudeshu yap pashyet. Whomever we see, bhagavad bhavam almana. What else? Bhudani bhagavati esha savai bhagavadottama. And then realizing that not only that it is the same Antaryami who is present inside, that Antaryami is the one who is present in everything. In everything. So, I'm looking at the mirror and shaving myself. Similarly, you cannot put the cloth on the form inside the in the mirror. I have to put the cloth on myself. Similarly, we are looking at this world, which is a mirror, and I have to correct myself. That is the process. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari. It's a very high Upanishad principle that is. If I have to do anything, I have to look at the world. I don't try to change the world. I correct myself. Here is where correction is required, not in the world. We are thinking what? We have to change the world first, isn't it? And they have tried and tried and tried and everything failed at the end. You try, you can also try if you want to try. But what will happen is, don't try to change the world. Correction is required inside us. That is the principle, what Ekadashi Skandam is saying. Bhagavad Gita also has the same message to us. That correction is required inside us, not outside. Not outside. So, once I have corrected myself, whoever comes into contact with me, I'll start realizing all of them are a reflection of an element what is within me, which is an advanced understanding. When I keep on correcting myself, you see that verse is so important in the Bhagavadam. People ask this question, who is a first class devotee? This is the answer. This is the answer. Sarva bhudeshu yap pashyet bhagavad bhavam almana bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottamaha. Bhagavadottama. First class devotee is this. Sarva bhudeshu yap pashyet bhagavad bhavam. Bhagavad bhavam in sarva bhudam. All living entities bhagavad bhavam. Isn't it? So that will not happen very easily, exactly like this way. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari. Vishwam is a mirror. The world is a mirror. And by doing anything in the mirror, it won't help. I have to change the inside me. If I make the corrections here, then what will happen is, everything in this world, I will start seeing that I have a relationship with the world, with this world. And that's the only way this ragadvesham will go from inside. It is no use at all to, of course, we will, while gossiping and talking, we will criticize people. But we know the problem is inside here, not anywhere else. People are criticizing all the time, isn't it? So, and we say, you're not done the right thing, I've done the right thing, and he's not doing the right thing, and so many things, it will go on like this. Because it is like that, that Vishwam Darpana Drishyamana Nagari, that the world what you are seeing there, is nothing but a reflection of inside. It is a very subtle point. We will discuss that when we come to those verses later. What is this world? Why world is a reflection of us? That is the most interesting question, isn't it? Why world is a reflection of us? So you will see here that if I correct it myself here, the world will be okay. The world will be okay. Rather than correcting the world, correct myself. Correcting. Here, that is where the correction is required. So, in the Mahatma Gandhi also mentioned that in his he had an understanding of these things, because he was obviously had that proper understanding from wherever he got it from. But he says in his autobiography, he mentions this, that this entire freedom movement, he says, has fallen into me as my prarabdha karma. That's how he saw that. We are saying that, oh, he has come to this world for fighting the independence and all that. Gandhiji is saying there, the whole independence movement has come to me as my prarabdham, he says. Because he knows very well, all this independence and all that doesn't mean anything. Today you are independent, tomorrow you are dependent. It can change any minute, isn't it? It can break up, it can come together, it can break up. Constantly it's going on all the time in this world. So to waste time on that was not the idea behind it. So somehow or the other, in a natural way, he said that this freedom movement has come to me as my prarabdha karma, and I'll do that. He said prarabdha has to go through this body. And I'm not at all concerned whether we will get freedom or not, because right up to 1945-46, there was no hope that there was going to be freedom for the country. And he wasn't had, he knew by then that if you read the books related to Ratan at that time, you will see that he was more or less clear that this freedom is not going to save the situation. Because as soon as 1948 he left, the followers changed the whole thing again and completely forgotten him. They put him into the Murthy, like we do. You put him in the Murthy and told him, oh, he has worked very hard for independence. Now we are managing the whole thing. So the same, like the way it happens now, the same thing has happened there also. It's always like that. Some great personality will come and show us some way, but as soon as he leaves, the whole thing goes with it. Nobody could stick to that. The whole philosophy changed and pattern of the way, the direction has all gone completely. So, important thing is that whatever karma that has come to him, he has executed that in a selfless way. And before the body drops away, he said, I wanted to attain the realized self. That's why he mentions this biography as my experiments with the truth. That's how he calls it. In other words, experiments with the truth, it is another way of saying about realizing the self. Another way of saying that. So, he realized that this karma that has come to me, somehow or the other situation developed like that in his life, that he was a leader. Naturally, many others followed him due to his saintly nature, and this goal has taken very strongly in his mind. Obviously, it is the Antaryami pushing from inside. And he mentions at that time that if I execute this karma that has come to me in a dispassionate way, without being attached to anything, whether it comes or not, I'll perform what I have to do. And in that way, that is the principle behind it. That means looking at oneself and doing the karma. Looking at oneself and that means instead of thinking about the effect of the karma and not worrying about that and not developing any emotions in relationship with that karma, like anger, yagam, attachment, aversion or insight, anything like that. If you do things like that, that karma will be perfect. Karma will be perfect. So therefore, what is the result of that? The more we are able to execute this karma without any sangam, without any attachment, that effect of that karma will be the most auspicious to the world. Will be most auspicious to the world. And all great Mahatmas, they have done karma in this way. And they will work in this world, but without forgetting about themselves. Not in a selfish way, but not forgetting about the self. In other words, they are spiritually conscious while executing the vyavaharam in this world. Because if you do like that, in that way, chanting alone is sufficient. Because you can see in Gandhiji's case, he has only chanted the holy name. Nothing else he has done. So, if you can fight a war of independence by chanting the holy name, is it not possible to use the same way in our own simple little life, what we have in this world? That is the question. So here, if in the middle of a big revolution, if this can happen, then if we say that, oh, I can't chant the holy name, that means it's a weakness within ourselves. Not to criticize anybody, because we have to change that weakness within us. Properly understanding Bhagavad Gita and taking that Bhagavad Gita's message seriously and take that process of chanting, and when that Kripa Shakti comes from Krishna, that Antaryami, when it starts flowing through, you will see that this chanting becomes a continuous process, as a undercurrent inside. So Therefore, the diagnosis is perfect. It says, now we have to treat the disease. So that means, with whomever we are connected in this world, in some way, due to prarabdham, it has happened. All connections, we meet up with some different people in this world, in different times in life, isn't it? That's due to prarabdham. There was some connection with that person in the past, in some form. That's why it has come back again in this life. So even while being in their connected, being connected with them, whatever we can do, we should do for them, but without being any sangam, attachment anywhere. That is the most important principle. Whatever we can do, we have to do for them, but without sangam inside, that shanti inside has to develop, and not to go and poke ourselves into anything which is unnecessary. So these are things there, and that should be performed in the most easy way it is to be done. So Krishna knows our weakness also. That is why you will see there, Krishna is saying, do it step by step. That is what Krishna is saying in that verse, abhyasa yoga yuktena. This yoga system, you should abhyasam, practice yoga yuktena, chedasa ananya gaminam. Abhyasa means step by step. Don't rush into it. So I heard this Bhagavad Gita verse, now today onwards I'm going to do it with everybody like that. Not like that. That in our life, this has to become this knowledge inside and dealing with the vyavaharam in that way. Krishna says practice that. It would change the situation. So, abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasa ananya gaminam prakritim purusham divyam yadi parthanu chindayan paramam purusham divyam yadi parthanu chindayan. Krishna says there, isn't it? So, that is that abhyasa yogam Krishna is talking about. Abhyasa yogam. So, everything in this world, normally how do we learn? We learn through abhyasam, isn't it? We learn through abhyasam by practicing it. And nothing will come without practice. Suppose you are a musician, you have to practice music, isn't it? First, you learn how to control your swaram, apaswaram and all that kind of things. You can look at the circus also. What do? They practice it to walk on the rope and various things what they do in the circus, all due to practice, is it not? So you can see some people find it even difficult to walk in the motorway. They find it very difficult. But some people can walk on top of a wire or a rope. They're able to walk. Why? It's due to practice, isn't it? So abhyasam. That's why Krishna is saying here that first thing to make that decision that the goal of the life is this self-realization. And at the same time, he has not given up the karmam in his life. He didn't leave any karmam behind it. But what he has done is that whatever karmam he has to go through, he has connected it in the proper Krishna conscious way, like Krishna has spoken here. Many people think like this, that I will give up my work and practice spiritual life and then I'll get a lot of time. But if you think like that, you won't be able to do it. Because even if though in your work you are a little bit distracted, that energy which is lost in that way, if you give up that work before you are matured, pakvam, their mind will get disturbed. Mind will get disturbed if you give up the work without any proper maturity inside. Mind will not cooperate with you. Therefore, even though a little bit of your energy is gone, lost, distracted in that work, balance energy, and he should utilize for spiritual realizations. So once that meditation becomes perfect inside, automatically work will stop. Then you won't be able to do any work. Work will go away. You don't have to leave the work. Work will leave you at that stage. So chedasa ananya gamina, Krishna says. Chedasa means mind. Without allowing the mind to go into other things, useless things. Work will continue, but at the same time, if you are chanting the holy name, you have to continuously chant the holy name. initially mind won't agree, but later on, that for japam, the main problem is the mind, isn't it? Mind is the main problem with the japam. So only thing what you can do is to tell the mind, now you go where you want, you buy a world tour ticket and tell the mind, you go now wherever you want to go, but I'm going to sit and chant the holy name. In that way, one has to start the chanting process. So the japam chanting, one has to practice. And then later on, the mind will come on your way, in your way. Whichever way you want the mind will follow you in that way. Mind has a nature, sahajam. Sahajam means in its own way, it will come and join you in your chanting process. If it comes, let it come. If it doesn't want to come, let it go its own way. Don't worry about that so much. So, but one decision you have to make, you're not going to listen to the mind. That's the most important thing. That is one practice of that. Now, after that, Atma Vicharam. Atma Vicharam means that how to engage in the Atma Vicharam. This is another interesting thing. Question is, everybody asks the question, how do I do that? They ask this question, Atma Vicharam, isn't it? So, so one engages in Atma Vicharam. There are many things. For example, Mahatmas have explained this in different ways. Suppose you want to learn swimming and you got all the books from W. Smith about swimming. There are volumes available there, how to swim, isn't it? And it tells you how to swim, various kinds of strokes and all sorts of body movement and all that. Then you got his instructor to teach you about that. So you decided that before you enter into the water, first in the land you will practice it, the movement, body movement and all. So in the land you are learning how to swim and you read all the books and the instructor also gave you some tips what you have to take into account. And then you have studied the science of swimming and you probably, even if you got a PhD in that, all that is done. But one day somebody took you and thrown you into water, you will notice that everything you have studied, everything you have been told is not helping. Is it not? At that time you'll say, I got my PhD in swimming, but you're going right underneath the water. Nothing is helping there. Spiritual life is like that. You have heard Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, everything. But if you have not gone inside, an inquiry hasn't started there, this spiritual life will stay like this, swimming on the land. Swimming on the land. This is what will happen. So that is where we will start opening our eyes. Whereas this Atma Vicharam is like that. Contemplation, mananam, shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. You may wonder why these three steps in the Jnana Margam. Reason is this. After you have heard, that's only 33% of that. The remaining 66%, 66 and a two-third, is mananam and nididhyasanam. What is mananam? Mananam is again and again going deeper into it, what you have heard. Now, we spoke about Jagrat Sapnam Sushupti, isn't it? How many of us have thought about Jagrat Sapnam Sushupti in depth? There is so much available in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Chandokyam, everywhere, and from various angles looking at Jagrat Sapnam Sushupti. And you start wondering so many things, you have not taken notice of this, notice of that. So what does that mean? It means absorption means this, that going deeper into something, which means books won't help you very much, because if you do it with the books or the cassettes or anything, it won't be deeper enough. If it has to happen in a deeper level, it has to be done without the help of any of these things. That is how everything was done in the past. Jagrat Sapnam Sushupti is one example. There are many other things to look at in Jnana Margam, isn't it? Like Narada Maharshi is saying here, Supta Prabodaya Sandho. Between the waking state and the deep sleep, what happens? And there are many other things. Also, you will notice if you study Bhagavatam, you will get a lot of topics to go deeper in the Bhagavatam. So that job is individual. Everybody has to do it for themselves. Nobody else can do that for us. We can't give that on. That is what Atma Vicharam does. The comparison they give that is to this swimming thing. In the Upanishads, this process they talked about. That it can tell you all the instructions, all the knowledge necessary to swim, everything you can teach a person. But suppose you take that person, throw him into the water, he will go down in the water. Why? He had only the theory there. It hasn't been practiced yet. So, Atmavijaram, reflection of the soul, mananam, is that process where you go deeper into the subject. And then what will happen, the last step is nididhyasana. Nididhyasana means that after you have gone deeper enough, you have got hold of something there. You started realizing that all this is spoken is the truth. You started feeling yourself and you don't want to lose it anymore. So you are making it yourself, your own. That is nididhyasana. Shravana mananam nididhyasana. Three steps in the jnana margam. That's where it is coming from. So that if you follow that route, it will work. It has to work. As I mentioned before, we are not able to do it for one main reason, that we haven't got that kick from Maya. Maya hasn't done that yet. At the moment, our present state of consciousness is, let the worldly life go through smoothly. And with that, we will bring spiritual life also. And I'll try to work with spiritual life, keeping all my life in this world in a peaceful state. If we take that approach, it won't happen. It won't happen, but it will happen one day when you start asking Krishna, I'm ready for it. Now you can kick me now. If it comes from your mouth, then Krishna says, yes, he is ready. He's asking for it. I'll give it to him. But so long as we are not asking for it, and when Krishna Andaryami inside, no, he is still looking for happiness in this world. Then Krishna says, no, you cannot have it now. Wait for a while. And this is the state we are at the moment. All of us are in that state. We are not ready for it. We are not feeling that necessity of having it. If we can get to understand with the mind and intelligence, we are willing to take it. But not in real life. We don't want it. We don't want that spiritual life. Like Mahatmas talk about that, all the great souls, they say that when they are thrown into the sea, deep sea, how they felt about it. You will see this in all the great devotees' case. So, here it's a you can see the difficulty that there are certain things which can take you to deeper understanding of these things. That if you ask this question, that Ahankaram is that what you are fighting against, isn't it? Ahanda. That Ahanda has to go from inside, or false ego inside. How will that go? That means, in order to, you have to ask this question, the entry into that world is through this way. That who is having these questions? Where is this coming from? What is my Swarupam? What is my identity? So, if this question, if you ask, it is possible that whenever there is any strong emotions or any thought waves comes, if you are able to ask this question, when I get angry, who is getting angry? When I get envious, who is getting envious? Or if I get distressed, who is getting distressed? That is the time when you can have a good fight with that false ego. That's the only time when you can get hold of him. When Krishna gives a very powerful distress to us, our false ego is at the lowest ebb at that time. Only at that point it will work. That is the best time. It will have its very good impact. Whereas when I have right up to prasadam, up to the nose, I have eaten and I had all the massages done in my body, Ayurvedam or whatever massage all done, body is in a good fit shape, everything, plenty of money, good householder life, and if I have to realize the self, that's not going to happen. That will not happen. It can happen when Krishna is saying there that this practice is only a beginning towards that. When Krishna's mercy starts coming in the distress form, in a powerful wave that comes, and it completely upsets the whole balance of life, then you will know what Krishna's kripa means, mercy means. So, initially, you have to ask this question, who is experiencing this distress. And it will, this question will, if you, moment you ask that question, you will see that you have a relief from that distress. Because the knowledge tells you, soul cannot experience distress. Isn't it? What is the understanding of soul? That is why Krishna spoke about this. Soul has no distress. Distress cannot stay in the soul. Because by very nature itself, soul is blissful. Satya Chitta Anandam is. There is no word dukkham in the soul. Dukkham cannot touch the soul. Distress cannot touch the soul. So when a heavy distress comes to us, the first question will come, because at that time it's easy to ask that question when the distress comes. But the distress has to be strong enough. It has to be very heavy. Only then you will go a little deeper inside and ask this question, who is suffering this distress? Who is experiencing this distress? This question, if you ask, you will see at that point, you will feel some relief inside, because this, what you have heard from Bhagavad Gita, that soul has no distress. Then who is experiencing the distress? Then you can see your Shraddha goes towards that Ahankaram inside. That's the only way you can get all of it. That Ahankaram inside. But we won't ask that question. We have got all other questions in this world. Isn't it? And we got used to asking all other kinds of questions. So we will ask the questions, how, why, and all these kind of things. In Adhyatmam, in spiritual life, you should not ask how and you should not ask why. Why and how has no place in spiritual life. These are for the scientists. Why and how is all for the scientists. Science, all these questions are better. Why and how? But you should not bring them into spiritual life. If you bring them to spiritual life, it won't work. Spiritual life and science are two different ways. Science going in one route, spiritual life is going in another route. So why, how has no use in spiritual life, in spirituality. In spirituality, it is no use. Just like example, why the reason is like this. Suppose you had a dream in the night, a heavy dream. And is there any point in asking why this heavy dream has come to me? Or how this has come? Useless it is, asking that question. So even in the case of dream, it has failed, that question. So the only you can ask this question in the external things, in Jagrat state. On external world is concerned, you can ask this question, why and how. You can't ask this question in the dream state. You can't ask this question in the deep sleep either. So what's the point? We make a big thing out of this, isn't it? Why and how? We ask that question, and therefore we say, we tell the children in the school, you have to start asking this. That's a sign of intelligence if you are asking this. We teach them all the wrong things like this. That if you are asking questions, you are intelligent, it means. They are all useless. Completely dullness it is. Then if you start thinking you are asking questions, you are intelligent, it is not. It's useless. Because in Adhyatmam, in spiritual life, why and how has no meaning. What that means, all that means is who. That's what it matters there. That is what it matters there. So, if we keep this only one question, who, then you will notice that, who is that inside me, who is functioning this Antaryami form, who is there, and who am I? Who am I? So, and who am I this, whom I am calling I am? So, and any other thoughts that comes along with that, and all of that thing, this one thought will take it away. After a while, what will happen is, if you ask this question continuously, that question itself will get a life in it. It has its own life at that point. So, so even when we look into ourselves, we'll start seeing that the movement of the life air inside, the prana's movement inside, even that will come to a controlled state by asking this question. So in the yoga margam, they go through the pranayama process. In the jnana margam, they goes through the inquiry process. That's the only difference there. As long as you keep on asking this question, whenever any strong emotions or thoughts or anything coming, if you keep asking this question, who has this question, where is it coming from, immediately you will notice that it's not coming from the soul, rather it's coming from the ego. It's coming from the ahankaram, that is coming from inside. So there are examples spoken about that. Suppose you are bathing in a big tank and you had a ring on your finger and the ring has fallen into the water. It has gone to the deep level, deep into the bottom of the water. What will you do first thing? First thing, you will hold your nose and go underneath the water looking for that, isn't it? Because you know where it has fallen. Once you have come out, then it's very difficult. But the moment you realize the ring is lost at a particular place in the tank, first thing, immediately what you will do is close your nose and go underneath the water if it's lying there anywhere underneath the water, if you can get there. So similarly, we have to go inside and start looking, where is that thing inside? Where is that thing I am coming from, that awareness is coming from? Therefore, it mentions there that they give the example, the Upanishad says this, कूपे यथा गाढ़ जले तथांदम निमज्ज मुद्या शिदया नितांदम प्राणम च वाचम च नियम्य चिस्वन वंदे निजाहम कृति मूल रूपम. In other words, कूपे यथा गाढ़ जले तथांदे. कूप means water tank. In that water, गाढ़ जलम, in a deep water, तथांदा निमज्ज मुद्या शिदया नितांदम, where you go and look for something what you have lost, where is deeply inside. പ്രാണം ച വാചം ച നിയമ്യ ചിന്വൻ വന്ദേ നിജാഹം കൃതി മൂലരൂപം. പ്രാണൻ ആൻഡ് ദ ലൈഫ് എയർ ആൻഡ് ദ വേർഡ്സ്, ദേ ഓൾ ആർ ഗോയിങ് ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് ഡയറക്ഷൻ ലുക്കിംഗ് ഫോർ ദാറ്റ് ദ സോൾസ് വേർ ദിസ് ഈസ് കമ്മിങ് ഫ്രം, ദിസ് അവയർനെസ് ഓഫ് മീ മൈ ഓൺ എക്സിസ്റ്റൻസ് വേർ ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് കമ്മിങ് ഫ്രം. വെൻ ദാറ്റ് ഹാപ്പൻസ്, ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് വേർ യു ഹാവ് ടു ഫൈൻഡ് ഹിം. സോ ദാറ്റ് അവയർനെസ് ഈസ് എവരിബഡി, ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്? You have to remember, in Vedantam, this is the greatest message to us, that this awareness inside us. So awareness is one thing that you cannot deny, isn't it? Our own existence, awareness. That is the only tangible indication to us of our own existence. Awareness, isn't it? Which we never lose any time. When you study Jagrat Swapnam Sushupti, you will notice that this is the one thing that moves in all the three states from one to another. So, quite often, the other day I was reading this, one sannyasi was talking to some university in Australia, and the university students, he was talking to them about consciousness. He was talking to them about the consciousness. So university students, they were listening to him, and after that one student came up to him and said to him, "We can't agree with you what you said," he said. So it is, if you go and take too much importance to this intelligence, mind and all that, when he was presenting Bhagavad Gita to them and saying to them that this consciousness or awareness or avabodham, what is spoken, Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, as the presence of Krishna's presence inside, they were finding it very difficult to take that. And he had to spend hours explaining to them. But because of the strong conditioning inside, that they have grown so big on the intellectual level, that they were finding it very difficult to think there is another plane inside us which is totally different from the intellectual and mental level. And finally, the sannyasi had to tell them that, well, we have discussed enough now, you take some prasadam. He said, what else can you do? That when the truth is spoken, they find it very hard. Now, you may think the intellectual students from the university, they would capture it. No, they won't. Because if you have allowed your mind and intelligence to absorb in the dead matter to a very high degree, then this thing, when it is spoken about the soul and consciousness and this awareness inside, they find that very difficult to recognize even. They find it very difficult. They were asking this question to them. Even this awareness, is it not different? They were asking, oh, when you are a child, you have one awareness. When you have grown up, you have another awareness. No, the awareness of your own existence never changes. Whether you are a child or a middle-aged person or an old person, that awareness of your existence never changes. What changes is that in relationship with the body and the mind, what activities you have done, what impressions you have created, they may change. But the awareness of your own existence never changes. It never decreases. It never increases either. So that is what he was trying to explain to them. So this question, if you keep on asking this, the external topics you can ask this why and how. But in Adhyatmam, in spiritual life, why and how, if you ask, there is no use. Asking that question is useless. Why and how? People are always asking questions, isn't it? About Bhagavatam, they will ask questions. There is so much questions. If you want to write down the questions in Bhagavatam, we can create another Bhagavatam with questions alone about Bhagavatam. So you have to see Bhagavatam as a spiritual energy. It's a spiritual text it is. It's not a historic book. It's not talking about the past or the future or the present. It's talking right now about the situation of ourself. That is why in Krishna's pastimes, you will see very interesting words how Sukadeva Goswami finished Krishna's pastimes. He used a verse there. Ya shrutva talparo bhavel. You have heard Krishna's pastimes. And he says there, after hearing all these pastimes, Ya shrutva talparo bhavel. If you have caught the truth right now, you have got it. If you haven't got it, if you think I've heard all the stories now, I'll go home and think about it, it's not going to happen. He says there in the Bhagavatam, Ya shrutva talparo bhavet. He says, right now, after hearing it, right at this moment, your attention, shraddha, should fall on the soul. If not after going home or after when you have holidays or something. No, it has to happen right now when you hear about Atma. You have to fall your attention on the Atma. If you get it, you get it. If you don't get it, you have to wait till it comes. So that is why you will notice there that even in the Salsangam or even when we discuss about Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, if that preparation inside, we can't do that. That is that Krishna's Kripa Shakti that helps to make that happen. So, Andaryami, form inside. Who am I? This question will come. And who am I? What is this? And this vicharam, this thought again and again, you have to keep on asking this question in relationship with every emotions or every thoughts that comes through our mind. What comes through our mind. When you are asking this question, so it takes up, it gets life itself. This question itself gets a life at that time. And at that time you can see here that kupe yatha gada jale tada nimajyam. That means like you search in the water, you search for it on the spot. Similarly, you will start inquiring about where is this coming from? Where is the source that is coming from? And that is the meditation. In the Jnana Margam, that is the process. That who is behind this? Who is asking this question? It's a very interesting question. When you get angry, who is getting angry? Or when you get any emotions for that matter, if you ask that question, who is getting it? That is the beginning of that. Or when you're getting disturbed, who is getting disturbed? Who is getting disturbed? And then you say, I'm getting disturbed. And who am I? And that awareness inside. Aham asmi, aham asmi, aham yo aham asmi. So you have to catch him there, that ego. It is a point where to get that ego. So you won't get an answer to this question from inside. You won't get any answer for that. Because it's an answerless question. It's an answerless question. Question itself is the answer. So that means that alertness inside, we have to ask that question, then like a mantram, and then it will develop its own life, its own life at that point. So what happens is, when you start giving attention to that, what's happening is, you are actually giving attention to the movement of the false ego inside, the chalanam of the ahankaram inside. So just like, you know, if you have noticed in the villages, you will notice this. Sometimes these small mice, the snakes will chase them. And the snakes, as the mice know certain holes where to hide from the snake. It'll go inside the hole and hide there. So snake cannot go inside because the hole is too small. Only mice can get in. So what the snake does is, it'll wait outside for the mice to come out. So similarly, and very alert he will be, the snake outside. And as soon as he comes out, he'll catch him. He'll catch the mice. So in the similar way, if you keep on looking at it, where this is coming from, you will notice that that thing is called spurti. Ahankaram is that spurti that comes out from that. And if your attention falls on that, and you start realizing that, that spurti, aham aham, that ego that has come out, you will see it goes and dissolves inside whenever you ask this question. For example, I mentioned that when you get a lot of distress in this world, then you stop all activities. Karma will go away. Sit yourself and then ask this question, where is this coming from? And that time you will notice that the false ego goes and dissolves somewhere. And that is that point where it is coming from. That mind goes back, and even in a very deeper level, when you are doing many transactions in this world, along with that, as an undercurrent, it will be still there. Where is this coming from? I am. This awareness coming from. And it will become an alert situation inside. That is that Krishna is talking about, that abhyasam. Abhyasa yogam. Krishna calls it as abhyasa yogam. Then once that has become a regular thing in life, that it will continue like that. Even in the office, if your boss or somebody threatens you or frightens you by some rude instructions or anything like that, you will get upset with the boss, isn't it? Because he is demanding so many things from you, the hours you have spent is not enough for him, or results are not satisfying for him, whatever it may be. So at that time also, you have to ask this question, where is this coming from, that I am? And that is the best time also to ask that question. So even though the problems in the office may be there, but if you utilize it in the proper way, it will benefit you spiritually. Spiritually, it will benefit you. So somewhere or the other, where that ego and goes and dissolves itself and takes its shelter, that is the place where it's coming from. That's the place where it is coming from. So here, coming back to this verse, we have seen that this experience, what we have talked about, you will notice there are certain special times where you can take notice of it. Suppose somebody praises you well. You've done a good job in the office, and the boss tells you you've done very well. And so if you are alert itself, you will know that where is that emotion coming from. I'll give you a very good example for what happened was, when Chandrasekhara Bharati was, jnanis are very alert in there, isn't it? They're very alert what is going on. When Chandrasekhara Bharati, who was known as one of the well-known inward-looking person, who had nothing to do with this world, because he lived all the time inside, all his life. He was like that. It so happened, the king wanted him to take in charge of the Sringeri Math. Sringeri Matham, he was in charge for a while, years ago, a few hundred years ago. And at that time, in that Sringeri Matham itself, everyone was very respectful to this Chandrasekhara Bharati as a sannyasi, But they were all feeling that he was not getting involved in any of the administration. In them days, spiritual personalities were like that. They had no interest in the administration and activities of this world because they see the temporary nature and they will give priority to their own self-realization. After that, the mutt and others. Because they know if they realize the self, so many others will get inspired in spiritual life in the proper way rather than inspiring them through the propaganda. So this was in his realization very deeply, and because he was so absorbed deeply like that, he had little interest in the administration of the mutt. That is how it was. So naturally what happens, because he was like that, somebody else has to take the responsibility of running the mutt, isn't it? So naturally the administrator was a very qualified person, in the sense that he understood the situation that Chandrasekhar Bharathi is not going to make any decisions. I have to make the decisions. Money was coming and government, those days kings were ruling. So kings were allocating a huge fund to the particular mutt in their territory. So a lot of money was given to this mutt. And money has to be spent somewhere, isn't it? Chandrasekhar Bharathi had no interest in the money. Whatever money comes, his money and all is not his issue at all, not concern at all for him. So the administrator thought he has to do something good, some proper utilization of the wealth. So he gone to Chandrasekhar Bharathi and discussed with him, what should I have some plans, proposals like this. And if you had anything in your mind you wanted to do with the money, then we are willing to carry it out for you. You say like that. So Chandrasekhar Bharathi thought about it for a while and he says to them that some particular Vedic sacrifice, he said, if you do that, years ago such a thought came to my mind, he said, like that. He didn't answer straight away, telling him that do this or anything. He said, years ago such a thought came to my mind, whether we should perform one of those sacrifices, Adirudram or something like that. Some sacrifice they mentioned like that. So this administrator, he went after hearing this. So he thought that he may like to have this done. So naturally he had to get all the qualified people for doing that. Lot of organization required. Everything was organized and it was conducted properly and all was completed. And then he went back and reported this to Chandrasekhar Bharathi. He reported this to him that everything was conducted well and everything was completed, he said. This is all in the Tungabhadra River. If you go, you will see there are famous mutts and everything. So when he went back and told him to Chandrasekhar Bharathi that everything has done very well and it was reported to him, he said Dhanyavad, because they talk to each other only in Sanskrit. He says to him Dhanyavad, he said. Dhanyavad means thanks. He says, thanks for telling me. So administrator looked at him. Why is he thanking me for this? He couldn't understand. So it was his desire and we have done what we thought that is the right thing to do. He doesn't have to thank me for that. So administrator stood there and looking at him, why is he thanking me for this? We say thanks all the time to everybody, isn't it? But they don't say thanks like that. They think about before they say something. So he said that, Dhanyavad, he said, and he stood there. So he asked him, the administrator asked him, that I have only done the karma what I meant to do. The money belongs to the mutt. All I have done is organized everything and it happened. He didn't want to take any ownership for that. He didn't want to take any ownership for that. And so Chandrasekhar Bharathi says to him, I didn't tell you Dhanyavad for that, he said. He says, I didn't tell you Dhanyavad for doing that. Only thing I wanted to tell you is that when you came and told me that everything went very well, it gave me some happiness inside. And he says to him that I've understood one thing, my mind can still move. He said, I've sensed from that. He says to him that a simple thing like this has happened and you come and told me everything has went very well. Why did that create that feeling inside of a happiness? That shows that he is ready to move again the mind. So closely they observe the movement inside of the ahankaram, false ego inside. He says, you have reminded me that where I am standing now, and that's why I have said thanks to you, he said. Not for anything else, that you have reminded me by saying this, that the mind can still move, that movement can happen. So, their attention is always inside. Attention is always where this false ego, because it's a false ego who is giving that vibration. That who is feeling the happiness? If you ask that question, who is feeling the happiness? Soul is not getting completely undisturbed whether you have done the sacrifice well or not. But then who felt the happiness? The ahankaram inside, the false ego inside. That is the ahankaram movement of the false ego. That's what they were looking at. That's what they were looking at. They were not looking at whether the sacrifice was done properly or not. So, all the time, they keep their attention on the false ego. And wherever it has come up, it goes up to the same place and dissolves there. That is what in the Upanishads they call it as Chidakasham. Chidakasham, the space inside. That space where it's coming from. And that state completely unaffected by that, sparshahinam, that state. Sparshahinam means without being untouched by that movement of the false ego inside. That state, that awareness, that is our surupam. Our surupam is there. Surupam means our spiritual identity is there. This is not false ego. This is not false ego. The place where that is come from, that ahankaram or ahanda, where it took its birth, that's where it goes and dissolves itself. So, you will see there in the same thing when they talk about that. Aham vinasham bhayam aham aham daya spurati hastvayam param purnam sat. Aham vinasham, aham, that awareness where it's coming from, aham aham daya, again it's awareness that is coming out all the time, and spurati hastvayam param purnam sat, that is a spuranam. Spuranam means what? Spurana means a ray that is coming from that awareness, this aham. But the source where it is coming from, that is, he says, that spurati astvayam paramapurna sat. That is sat. The source where it is coming from is sat. Is sat. It is from the sat that is coming from. If you remember that verse. Nasado vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada. Ubhayorabi drishtvandam stanayor tattva darshivi, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying that satya and asatya, two things he is discussing there, isn't it? This one verse alone is a very important verse for vijaram. Vijaram means for absorption, deep absorption in there. Krishna is saying, na sado vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada. Satya will always has no abhavam, he says, isn't it? And asatya cannot have any bhavam. This must be always in our head, these words. Nasado vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada. Krishna says, in the translation, if you look into the English translation of that verse, Prabhupada mentions there, that we may not take notice of that verse very much because we think that, oh, it's something very vague and abstract, we'll see. But that's not how it is. The verse is saying that, it's the second chapter, yes. 16, yeah. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent there is no endurance. And of the existent there is no cessation. The seers have concluded by studying the nature of both, is it not? So, Krishna is saying there that asatya cannot have any bhavam And Sat cannot have any abhavam. In simple words, if you take Sat and Asat properly, you have to understand Sat has no abhavam and Asat cannot have any bhavam. That's all it is. In other words, Asat cannot claim any time existence and Sat cannot claim any time non-existence. In other words, isn't it? So, here also it mentions here that spuranam that comes from the source where your false ego goes and dissolves, that ray is coming from that Sat, not from the Asat. It comes from the Sat, not from the Asat. Jnana Margam is very interesting if you get absorbed in that. Even if you, as I said, all this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, if you keep on hearing and one day when Krishna gives us that kick from behind, this will all become very useful. Because only then we will take it in the proper spirit. Otherwise, we will simply think that, oh, that's I have understood Bhagavad Gita also, like so many other things I have understood in this world. But this is not for understanding. That's the first thing. It is not for understanding. It is for realizing. Anubhavam. In reality, it has to happen inside. For example, I have some conception of life now at the moment based on the society I live, the country I live, the people I associate with. I have one concept of life. When Bhagavad Gita comes in, all this concept will change. It has to change, is it not? For example, in our present spiritual life, we try to accommodate many things into it. One person told me yesterday, this one. He's a young person. He's only 24, 25 years old. He got married last year and got a baby also now. And he says to me, spiritual life is a lot, he says. From all sides, all sorts of things people are saying to me, he said. And I'm completely confused, he said. And plus now I'm a householder, I'm a father now. He says, I don't know what to tell the child, what to tell my wife, and what I should do myself, he said. He took to spiritual life with some basic understanding. What is that understanding? I'm not this body, and I have to do devotional service, and you should follow the four regulative principles. You should chant 16 rounds. That's all nice. He started that. But then he's not moving further from there. He's stuck in that state. He's saying, he said, all I have to do in all my life, I keep chanting 16 rounds and telling everybody else this four regulative principles. There's nothing more to do than that. So that is where this problem is this, that if you do not take this Bhagavad Gita deeply into the heart, and if the correct changes don't happen there, then we will remain where we are. We won't go any inch further. That is the difficulty. So this, the realized personalities are saying to us that this awareness is the only ray that's coming from the Sat inside. Everything else here is Asat. Body is Asat, mind is Asat, intelligence is Asat, senses are Asat, ego is Asat. But from that Antaryami inside, a ray comes out in the form of this avabodham or awareness, and that is Sat. Because it's coming from that Sat, that is the only one these sages have found out long ago. That's what Krishna is saying there. Ubhayorabhi drishtvandam stanayor tattva-darshibhi, he says. Tattva-darshis has found out the tattvam, what they are looking for, is that awareness that's coming from the soul. Coming from the soul. Krishna put it in four simple lines and gone on to the next one. But the depth of that verse, if you analyze it, you can see that that the spiritual life is real. It is not something to be imagined about or to be, it is something that has to happen here. When we say 95% of us is inside, it is all related to Sat. The other 5% which is related to Asat, that's what we are busy with. The 95% Sat, we have no time. We have no time. So you can see from that how far away we are from realizing the truth. From realizing the truth. So that's why Krishna is saying here in these verses also that that vastu, in the Bhagavatam the used word is vastu, isn't it? Vedyam vastavamatra vastu shivadam. He says tapatrayon mulanam. So that vastu satyam, that is the truth, that will coming from inside, when realization gets deeper, that will become us. We will become that. How do we become that? Exactly like the way what happens to us at the time of death. If you remember Jadabharata, what happened to him? Bharata Maharshi says that in the Bhagavatam. He says, I got attached to the deer. And at the time of leaving the body, initially I was fixed up in the spiritual side. But due to my attachment, at some point, he says, when I looked at the deer, I started thinking, am I not that deer? See how that changes happen. Am I not that deer? This is what has happened inside. And immediately, material nature gave him that dress of the deer. Is it not? So in the same way, if our attention falls on that sat, it's exactly the same way it has to happen. That if our attention falls on the sat and it becomes very intense, one day what will happen is, we will start thinking, am I not that? The same way it will happen. Exactly like the way it has happened with the deer. This is why Krishna has packaged this body so well. And he has put that Antaryami inside, giving us all an opportunity to look for him right there. Only thing is, we are not turning inside, we are going outside. That's where the problem is. So we'll continue after a few minutes. So, that source where that awareness is coming from. Aham, isn't it? Aham ayam kuto bhavati chinvada ai padatyaham nija vijaranam. It is a subject where requires vijaram. Vijaram means, where is this thought aham, aham, aham? Is I am. Where is it coming from? Aham inashabhai aham aham daya spurati astvayam parama purna sattva. Then you will notice that aham is the spuranam. Spuranam means that is the ray of that is emanating from that source, which is sat. That is where it is coming from. And that means when our inquiry began, who is experiencing this? Who is experiencing this anger? Who is experiencing this happiness or distress? Whenever we, any emotions for that matter, when we ask that question, who is experiencing this? You will notice that question, because it's not the anger or any other emotions, it cannot come from the, it's not soul is experiencing this, because Shastram is saying to us, soul is always Satya Chitta Anandam. Chit Shakti and Sachidanandam, or in Satya, eternity or awareness, existence, and Anandam, blissful nature, is the nature of the soul. So it cannot come from there. Then where is it? It cannot come from there. All these are activities of the mind. Which one? Ragam, Dvesham, lust, anger, greed, kamam, krodham, lobham, and illusion, madam, malsaryam, pride, ego. All of them are nothing but the activities of the mind. It has nothing to do with the soul. But when we keep asking this question, that who is experiencing, you can see that ahankaram is experiencing this. Ahankaram means false ego. False ego is experiencing it, and the false ego goes away and hides at that time when you ask this question. Suppose somebody has, like in the case of Chandrasekhar Bharati, that's what I was talking about, when he mentioned this to him, and when that happiness he felt, immediately Chandrasekhar Bharati thought, where is it coming from, this happiness? Immediately he goes back to his own Surubam, where it came from. And the place where it came from, that is Satya. That is not Asatya. That is Satya. And that Spuranam from that is this Aham Aham. I am that Sat. He manages to bring it back to its source again. So that's what he was saying here. So as much as this practice continues, Krishna is saying Abhyasam. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasananya ghaminam. He says that in that verse, isn't it? Prakritim purusham divyam yadi parthanu chindayan. If you look into that verse, 8th chapter, verse 8, yes. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chedasa ananya gaminam
പരമം പുരുഷം ദിവ്യം യാതി പാർത്ഥാനു ചിന്തയൻ. Now, Prabhupada's translation is, you who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha Arjuna, is sure to reach me. Now, this is spoken from a devotee's point of view. That is how it will be. But when you come to the Jnanamargam, you get a lot more clarity about it. You get a much more clarity on this. Because in Bhakti Margam, you will only talk about the form and remembrance of the form. But in Jnanamargam, you are going more closer towards the soul, towards the soul it is spoken, more from the point of view of a soul, as a spiritual identity it is spoken from that. That's what it is happening here, that he maintains there that Krishna is saying, Prakritim Purusham Divyam Yadi Parthanu Chindayan, Krishna says there. In other words, while the living entity is within this body itself, he has already become perfect. So, in other words, while staying within this body, he is not in the body. Ashariram va vasandam, Upanishad says. That means, while staying within the body, he has realized he is that vastu inside who is uninterrupted, unbroken, akhanda vastu. Akhanda means that vastu, in other words, just like Bharata Maharaj became the deer. When did that happen? When in his thoughts, at some point at the time of death, at some point, up to a certain time, he was thinking, I am Bharata, I am King Bharata, he was executing his spiritual life. But when this attachment from the deer came, at a particular point in the process of death, suddenly he started thinking. A thought came inside. What was that thought? Am I not that deer? That's the end of it. With that, his identification with this body has gone. His identification with the deer body got established. This is the death process. Krishna talks about that. In the Bhagavatam, if you look, you will see to Uddhava, Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, death is not a big thing to talk about. Why? Because he says there that Mrityu, he says, I think it is somewhere in the 11th canto, he says that nothing much to be spoken about death. All it is, your Shraddha has gone away from your identity at the moment to something else. That's all death is. He makes it very simple. When you think about it, it looks like a very simple thing, isn't it? About he says that Mrityu Atyanta Vismriti, that's how Krishna puts it. Mrityu, death is nothing but forgetting something once for all. What is that he has forgotten? He has forgotten he is Bharata, rather he has started thinking he is the deer. That's all it is, Mrityu, he says. When I am thinking I am this body, I identify with this body. The moment within me, this identification is broken with the body, then what will I'll have to identify with something, is it not? So what will happen? I'll identify with the other living entity, whoever I have thought about for a long period of time. And at some point, Krishna is saying, Mrityu Atyanta Vismriti. For while this shift happens from this body to another body, from Bharat Maharaj's body to deer body, when that movement happens, initially he was thinking, I am Bharat Maharaj and this is the deer. He was looking at the deer and that's the deer. But due to the attachment inside, at some point he has forgotten that he is Bharat Maharaj. And he started thinking, am I not that deer? And that is when Krishna is saying that death has happened. That means death for this body has happened, or death of this identification has happened to this identification, and birth has started to another identification. This is the death process. It's the Jadabharata story is very beautiful in the Bhagavatam to illustrate this process, how it works. Mrityu Atyanta Vismriti,
Krishna mentions in the Bhagavatam. Atyanta Vismriti means final forgetfulness. Finally forgetting it. Up to that point you are thinking about yourself as Bharat Maharaj. But once for all, finally you are forgetting you are not Bharata anymore. You lost that. Isn't it? Sometimes you can see when we get this illness like Alzheimer or what do they call the other one? Dementia. Yes. Sometimes they will know who they are. They don't know who they are. A similar state can come. Even while it's also proof that it can happen. We lose ourselves who we are. We don't know who we are, then what will happen? If you don't know who I am, now I am thinking I am this, I am that, so many things. We all think, isn't it? We are somebody. But suppose you come forget about myself, who I am. So that's the situation that will happen at that time. That's what mentions here. So Krishna is saying here, you have to come to that state while living within the body, not after leaving the body. That is Krishna's point. Krishna is saying, if while living within this body, if you lose your identity with the body, but if you are able to identify with your real self inside, then you can escape from here. That is the most important thing. That's what Krishna says to Uddhava also, is it not? What did he say? He says to Uddhava, it is very simple, he says to Uddhava. What is that verse? This is our memory. He says to him, after saying everything, this is in the 11th chapter. If you look, Sri Bhagavan Vaja, there in the 8th verse, Dehastobi na Dehasta, Vidwan Sopnan Yadhotida. Adehastobi Dehasta Kumadi Sopnadrakyatha. This stage we have to get to. Very important, isn't it? Dehastobi na Dehasta. Krishna says in the Bhagavadam, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also. What more can Krishna do? He's saying to us, Dehastobi na Dehasta. You are in the body, but you have left the body. And Vidwan Sopnan Yadhotida. How does he see that that time? Just like he has come out of his dream state and he has woken up from the dream, he doesn't look back into the dream and start thinking about the dream too much because he knows it's a dream. Similarly, while within this body, it's also when we wake up in the vacant state, properly when we wake up, what will happen? We will lose this identity with this body, identity with this body, and identification with the self will happen properly. And Krishna is saying here, Dehastobi na Dehasta. That is what Krishna is saying to us all the time. Vidwan Sopnan Yadhostida. Adehastobi na Dehasta. On the other hand, someone who is always thinking about his body, what will happen to him? Krishna says in the next line, he will leave the body, but he will want to go back to that same body again. Adehastobi na Dehasta. He is Adehasta, but he wants to be Dehasta again. Kumati, his brain is useless. Sopnadruk yatha, he says. That he is thinking, oh, this is another dream, let me enjoy this dream. He has woken up, but he wants to enjoy this new dream, woken up state. So, there is a lot of subtle things in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The deeper we, these are things for reflection and analysis. And if we don't give time for all these things, what is the use of all this? If you can sit without anything in the hand, simply absorbed in the thoughts of all these things, it will start working from inside. Otherwise, it cannot happen. That is why we keep on studying books. I can keep on talking about. There is not a lot to study actually, strictly speaking. There's very few things. But because we are not hitting it all the time and we are finding our mind is so gone out in the world, therefore it becomes very difficult to change that track from attention from the world. Two or three books like Kathopanishad, Bhagavad Gita, Ekadasha Skandam in the Bhagavatam, these two or three things is more than enough if you properly do self-inquiry with that.
ആത്മവിചാരം വിത്ത് ദാറ്റ് ദെർഫോർ ദാറ്റ് ഇസ് വൈ യു വിൽ സീ ദർ ഇൻ ദി റിയലൈസ്ഡ് സോൾസ് കേസ് ദേ ഹാവ് ഗോട്ട് എനി ഡിഫിക്കൽട്ടി ബിക്കോസ് ദേ ഡിഡ്ന്റ് ഹാവ് എനി ഓഫ് ദീസ് modern facilities, but they all got realized, and we have got all the facilities and we are nowhere near to any realization. This is the reason behind it, because they have devoted so much time for self realization and they understood the importance of it. We still haven't understood the importance. We think that spiritual life is some kind of entertainment or something, isn't it? We think, oh, it's all the way it is, singing and dancing and going feasting all the way. If you keep on staying in this state, you will always singing and dancing. Nothing will happen at the end. There is so much time absorbed required in all these things, and it requires that particular approach what Krishna is talking about here. Then till we get that awareness inside, that abhyasam or practice must continue, Krishna says there. In other words, we have to keep on going inwards, looking for that. Basically, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't require any money. It doesn't require anything except that you sit one place and devote time for that, for these thoughts, to absorb in those thoughts. And when we become serious in that, Krishna says the person is getting serious. So to help us to get deeply absorbed more, Krishna will send some proper message at that time. That's the way it will happen. So that means going inwards means taking a dip after dip inside again. So this chanting and self-inquiry, vijaram, dhyanam, meditation, bhakti, all these things we have to keep absorbed in. It will benefit only for those who have taken spiritual life seriously. This is the important thing. This is only for those who have taken spiritual life seriously. For many people, spiritual life is an entertainment. Entertainment. They are not serious beyond than that. A few rathyatras in a year, or organizing a few good feasts and a good kirtanam, that's okay. That's also alright, you know, on one level. But you couldn't say that they are very serious about spiritual life. When you become serious about spiritual life, because when they are executing in that state, all those activities, their inside realization is, I am separate, this is separate. Spiritual activity is separate, I am separate. I am doing all these things for my spiritual advancement. It is in that consciousness they are executing that. But when you genuinely become serious, extremely serious about spiritual life, what will happen is everything what you do in life is spiritual. It has to become like that. Because for those people who are doing in that way, all these things won't make any sense to them. But it will benefit them also, because these things will go and lie there. This will go in inside, lie there. When their prarabdham is gone, it finishes up. If you get a few by when the, because nobody knows how life will take us in this world, isn't it? It can go. After a while, from few sides, you get some heavy knocks from four different sides. So at that time, they'll start remembering all this, what they have heard. Till that time, it will be dancing, music and feasting will go on. But when we really get it, from some sides, all these beatings from Krishna's sides, Krishna, that time he says, you'll start remembering all these things, because all what you are hearing now will go and lie there. And when we get bitten, or when we get beaten by the material nature, and start, these things will start coming out from inside, and that's the time when it will change the whole situation. And then you start saying, oh, I've heard all these things before. Somewhere I've heard, I can't remember where, but somewhere I've heard this, and you'll start coming out. And then you start saying to Krishna, it's enough, you had beaten me now. Don't beat me anymore. You'll start saying like that. And after saying all these things, Krishna is going to do now is, that means this verse, Abhyasa Yoga Yuktena Chedasa Ananya Gaminam. And Prakritim, Prakritim Purusham Divyam Yadi Parthanu Chindayan. Krishna is saying here, Prakritim Purusham Pradi Parthanu Chindayan. Abhyasa Yogam. Through Abhyasa Yogam, he says here,
he will attain that Paramapurusha. Paramapurusha, Supreme Person. He says, Paramam Purusham Divyam. Paramam Purusham Divyam Yadi Parthana Chindayan. So, after that, he says here, he will attain that Paramam Purusham. That means that Antaryami who is inside. Who is inside. So, after Krishna is saying here, that if you have come to this state through Abhyasa, means practice, Abhyasa Yoga Yuktena, Chedasa Ananya Gaminam, that means your this undercurrent has become very strong inside. Completely absorption has happened inside. Then what will happen is Prakritim Purusham Divyam Yadi Parthanu Chindayan. You have come to the realization that Prakritim Purusham Divyam, that divine nature of the Supreme Person, Antaryami inside, you have started realizing it. In other words, Antaryami realization has become your nature. Antaryami realization has come to you. After all these things what you have spoken so far, that means you are holding on to that Aham Tattvam, Aham Aham, where that is coming from, and you started seeing that based on Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita, that signal is coming from that Spuranam, from the Sat inside. All this understanding has gone in. And due to your when the Prarabdham runs out, that means Prarabdham keeps you occupied in this world with various things, isn't it? So when Prarabdham diminishes, all worldly issues also goes away. Worldly problems also leaves you. That means your attention in the world totally disappears. And at that time, the attention has gone inwards so well that Prakritim Purusham Divyam Yadi Parthana Chindayan. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, Arjuna, your chinda thoughts will be centered around that Purusham Paramam inside, Antaryami inside. That's where your attention will be. And Krishna says, when you come to that stage, that Antaryami you want to understand. And how to understand that Antaryami is the many verses from now on. You look at the next verse. That Antaryami inside, Krishna is explaining in the next verse, how he operates from inside. Very beautiful verses. How the Antaryami operates from inside. How the Antaryami operates from inside. You must not forget previous things what we have spoken. Only if you follow through, you will enjoy the remaining verses. How it is all connected to each other. Krishna is presenting a whole science of self-realization to Arjuna. And Arjuna is sitting and listening with a lot of amazement that Krishna is talking about the inner world, isn't it? He's talking about the inner world. Outside world, Krishna has not touched at all. Have you noticed that in Bhagavad Gita? Everything what Krishna is talking about is the inner world. And this inner world is what we are actually. 95% of us is that. It's only this something what Prakriti, material nature is put on us, is this body, mind, intelligence, ego and dress, what we have bought from the shops and the all other things. This is only that 5%. Though going inwards, when you get there, you will notice that that world which is a lot bigger than the world what is outside. And that's why Krishna is saying, slowly he is taking us into that inner world, saying to us that Antaryami inside, how shall ye see him? That's the next verse. So let's look at that verse. Verse 9. Kavim Purana Manushasidharam Anoraniyam Samanusmaredhyam Sarvasya Dadharam Achindya Rupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparasthad Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anoraniyam Samanusmaredhyam Sarvasya Dadharam Achindya Rupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparasthad Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anor Aniyasam Anusmaredhyam Sarvasya Dadharam Achindya Rupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparastad. We'll read the translation. one should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and being transcendental is beyond this material nature. If you read that verse in translation, I don't think you will go very far. You will stop there itself, Bhagavad Gita, and you will go to some other chapter. This 8th chapter is very complex chapter because it is from the inside world Krishna is talking about everything. In today, all we can do, because Krishna is speaking, we have to just accept it. And the translation also is not helping very much, is it? One sign is saying you have to meditate upon. How will you meditate upon the controller, smaller than the smallest, to think that Krishna is like the worm in the smallest worm, amoeba or something like that? Or Krishna is the biggest person, 8 foot tall, somebody is there in the YouTube, they have put, is the biggest person. How do you imagine about Krishna? So all these things, explanations there, we have to know it properly. Otherwise, we won't understand this verse. Kavim Puranam Anushasidaram Anuraniyam Anusmaredya Sarvasya Dhadharam Achindya Rupam. If it is Achindyam, which you cannot even imagine, Achindya means what you cannot even chinda, you cannot think about. If you cannot think about something, how can you meditate upon that? So, you can see the difficulty in Bhagavad Gita. Sarvasya Dhadharam Achindya Rupam. Then he says, Aditya Varnam. The color is like the sun, he says. Color what? Tamasam Parastad. Then, but Tamasam Parastad, and he is transcendental as well. So, not one word is very helpful to us, is there? So, you can see, Kavim Puranam Anushasidaram. Let us look at that. First of all, each word we have to understand there. Kavi means what? What does Kavi means? Wrong. Kavi, that is the mistake. That is the, all the mistakes started there itself. Kavi, normally the word translation, is it translated poet?
Yeah.
No, here it is the one who knows everything. Yeah. Kavi, in Sanskrit itself, the definition of Kavi is, Kavi means Krantadarshi. Krantadarshi means one who can see things in the most subtle level. That is Krantadarshidam. So, rishis are all Kavis. All the rishis are Kavis. They are Kavi. They are called Kavi. But in the modern world, we call it as poets, which is wrong. Poets are not Kavis. That is a misunderstanding. Somehow it has come like that. Poets are thoughtful people, but those who can see in the extreme subtle level of the souls and spiritual life, spiritual in other words, completely on a subtle platform, they are called Kavi. Kranta Darshi Kavi. It mentions like that. So, things what normal people don't see, what ordinary people don't see, they can see. That's why they are called Kavi. Kavi means that we, for example, in our relationships in this world, sometimes things go wrong in the relationships and then we blame on something. Oh, he did this to me, I did this to him, and I shouldn't have done that, or he shouldn't have said that, or something like that will happen in our relationships in this world, isn't it? So, ordinary people will see in that level. A Kavi, what he will do, he will look in deeper level and see that where things went wrong, and he'll find it out. He will understand that only due to my attachment, this has happened. We won't think normally like that, would we? We will say this to others, but when it comes to you, what happens to us, what we will do? We'll say, oh, he is responsible for all my problems. He is deliberately after me. He is giving me trouble. We'll point out somebody and say that he is the whole problem. We have to get it off him from there. We ban him or we give him a letter out. Don't come here anymore. You are the whole problem. Problem is nobody. You are ourselves the problem. So, Kavi is that person who is seeing where is the problem coming from. He can understand things on a much deeper level. That such a person is called Kavi. Krishna calls that, he says, what does he say? If you look into 10th chapter, he says, who is Kavi? He mentions there. About Shukracharya, he mentions. Remember? That after talking about various opulences in the 10th chapter, when Krishna started saying that there he says about this word kavi. That is, if you kept looking from verse 12-13 onwards, you will see. That's how you have to understand that. What is that? It says, it's a lot more in the Bhagavadam, but in the Bhagavad Gita, it is in a very limited sense. He mentions that, let me have a look, 1 second. Which one? No. This is Krishna says Kavi. That's right, yeah. What does he say? Vrishninam Vasudevosmi Pandavanam Dhananjaya Muninam Apyaham Vyasaha Kavinam Ushana Kavi. Krishna says, isn't it? Kavinam Ushana Kavi. Who is Ushana? Ushana is Shukracharya, isn't it? And among the great thinkers, I am Ushana. Ushana. Kavinam Ushana Kavi. Prabhupada mentions there, I think, about that later. Ushana was among the kavis. Ushana was the spiritual master of the demons. Krishna says, I am that. He was extremely intelligent. Who? Shukracharya. Far seeing, political and spiritual in every way. Thus, Ushana is another representation of the opulence of Krishna. There he calls Shukracharya as Kavi. He says there, Kavinam Ushana Kavi. So that is how you understand. Why Shukracharya is Kavi? Think about this. What happened? These are all interesting things to look at in Bhagavadam. When Mahabali went, lost the war, the demigods and the demons fought each other, isn't it? So this Brihaspati was the spiritual master of the demigods. And Shukracharya was the spiritual master of the demons, right? And Krishna says that I am Shukracharya. Why is he saying that? When the war happened, afterwards, Mahabali decided that Mahabali went to Shukracharya and told him, what should I do? He said. So Shukracharya thought about this in very depth. And he said, where did these demigods get all their strength from? See how intelligent he is. He's a real clever person. Clever in the sense that he can think deeply. He said, they got their strength because they have pleased Krishna in a way, another way. Let us do the same thing. Let's see if we can do. And there was a process in the form of sacrifices, Ashwamedham sacrifice. And 99 sacrifices Mahabali performed. Shukracharya was the personality behind it. After that, Shukracharya told Mahabali, now you go to heavenly planets. You may not have to even fight the war, he said. And Mahabali goes there. And demigods got so frightened, Mahabali was coming like a very powerful wave of army was coming in with Mahabali. All the demigods left the heavenly planets and ran away from there, handing over everything to Mahabali. And not only that, when Mahabali took over control of the heavenly planets, Mahabali had the greatest quality. Our Shukracharya told Mahabali, whatever may be, that quality of Brahmanyam, you should not lose it. Demon, big demon, but great Brahminical quality in him. Imagine that. A big demon, but with all the Brahminical qualities in that person. Mahabali was that. That is why Krishna is saying, of among all the Brahmanas, I am Mahabali, he says. Brahmanyanam balistvam. Among all the Brahmanas, I am Mahabali, he says. So we have a conception about demons in another way. We think demon like they come in the television, isn't it? Demon means big teeth coming out and very... we get some sort of funny understanding about the demons. We have no idea what actually a demon means, isn't it? We think that demon means... Ramanand Sagar has given us how what a demon should look like, or what the television studios have prepared a demon for us. We think demon is like that. Demon is not that. In fact, Hiranyakashipu, after his austerities and penances, when Brahma came and sprinkled the water on him, Bhagavatam says, he looked like a diamond body, color as well as the strength in him. He was most good looking. Who? Hiranyakashipu. But in our own idea, we think Hiranyakashipu is somebody like, he's an asura, isn't it? Whereas in demigods are all looking very beautiful and demons are looking very ugly. No, it's not like that. That's a misunderstanding what we have got. But anyway, this Shukracharya, he says to Mahabali that you go and you won't have any problem. And exactly same thing happened. Indra walked out of the heavenly planet seeing Mahabali arriving. He felt so frightened that he had to leave the place. Later on, when Aditi Devi, that means demigod's mother, she felt distressed. And because her children were all in problems. Earlier, Didi Devi said to Kashyapa Prajapati, what should I do? And Didi Devi had all the demons born from her. Aditi Devi had all the devotees, all the demigods born from her as well, isn't it? So Aditi Devi goes to Kashyapa Prajapati, her husband. You can see both the demons and the demigods, the father is the same. Only mother is different. Puranams will present many things like this. The father is the same. The mother is different. So one mother is saying to the father, that give me some strength so that I can kill the other children from the other mother. And when Aditi Devi prayed this, Kashyapa Prajapati, after Aditi Devi left, he is saying to himself, Aho Mayabalam Vishnu, he says, look at the power of Vishnu's Maya, that he has put me in this awkward situation. I married these two ladies, Aditi and Didi. Aditi wants me to give her a blessing and a power to kill all the children from Didi. And Didi wants me to bless her to give some power to kill all the children from Aditi. So he says, Aho Mayabalam Vishnu, he says, Vishnu's Mayabalam, power of the Maya, how it works. So it is there in the Bhagavatam to indicate to us that this demon devotee, all these are temporary things. They are not permanent. Soul is not a devotee or a demon. It's all in our consciousness. That's in our mind what it is. That's all it is. That's why this Mahabali will come as Indra in the next day of Lord Brahma. He is going to come as the another Indra there. And so what happened was, so after that, Kashyapa Prajapati said this, and later on, after this, Aditi Devi said to Kashyapa Prajapati, Kashyapa Prajapati told her payobratham to follow, which she did, and eventually Vamana Murthy appeared, and Aditi Devi paid her obeisances to Vamana Murthy and told Vamana Murthy, somehow or the other, my children are suffering. You have to get them back, the demigods, heavenly planets, back to them again. Vamanamurthy says to Aditi Devi, everything is very wonderful, but you know that Mahabali there, he is also very strong at the moment because this Shukracharya has kept everything on the track with Mahabali's concern. So I can't do anything about it, he says. You have done everything what you have told, but I'm sorry I can't do anything because that Shukracharya has kept Shukracharya has kept this Mahabali in a very good shape because Mahabali was listening to Shukracharya all the time what he said. He was listening to it. So Aditi Devi said, well, wait, and I will wait till you can do something about it. And Vamanamurthy said to Aditi Devi that let me see what I can do. I may have to do something which is quite not right. And that's what he did to Mahabali, isn't it? Came up to him in disguise as a brahmachari and measured the 3 feet and measured the whole thing and took away from him. But even then, Mahabali was not shaken, Bhagavatam says. Even though the whole thing was taken away, Mahabali was not shaken at all. Mahabali was so fixed in the truth, and that is the power of Shukracharya. Why? Shukracharya has given this. But one thing Shukracharya did, that when Vamanamurti came, he told Mahabali, if you give it to him, that's the end of it. Everything is over then. And therefore, he warned Mahabali a lot at that time not to hand over the land to all the wealth to Vamanamurti. But still he did that. That is Mahabali's greatness, as to show the greatness of Mahabali, not to bring Shukracharya down. That's not the intention behind it. Do you know how you know that? As soon as this was over, Krishna calls, Vamanamurti calls Shukracharya first and says to him, you are the most qualified person to complete this sacrifice. What Mahabali was doing, please complete that and everything will be okay. And Shukracharya glorifies Vamanamurti at that time. So you have to look at it from these angles. Otherwise you will think that, we'll start thinking, oh, he is this spiritual master for the demons? What kind of demon spiritual master is that? You'll start thinking like that, isn't it? But our understanding has to be that demon, devotee, these are all in the mind. Hiranyakashipu is a demon today, tomorrow is a devotee. Ravana is a demon today, tomorrow is a devotee. That is only inside our ragadvesham. That is what the devotee means or demon means. It's based on the ragadvesham inside. Once ragadvesham goes away from inside, then you are neither this nor that. You are actually what you are in your spiritual identity, isn't it? So, here coming back to this verse, Kavim Puranam Anushasidharam Anuraniya. Anoraniyam Anusmaredhya Sarvasya Dataram Achindyarupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparastad. So in other words, Kavi, strictly speaking, the only Kavi, real Kavi, is Krishna himself. He is the Kavi, isn't it? Because that quality, Kavitvam, is in Krishna. And if Krishna manifests in anyone, anytime, manifests in him in a big way, then that person becomes a Kavi. That is how you become a Kavi. Kavitvam, or that quality of subtlety in a person, that happens when Krishna manifests in someone. When Krishna manifests like that, he becomes what is called Rishi. All the Rishis are Kavis. Rishis means the sages. You know, like we talk about Narada Maharshi and Vishwamitra, Vasishta, Angiras, Durvasav. List of them, isn't it? This is mentioned in a big list in the Bhagavatam, you can see. They are all Rishis. Rishis are all Kavis. Because they can, Vedavyas, Shubhramarshi, they are all Kavis. They are all Kavis. So, normally, in the olden days, only Rishis were called Kavis. Today, we call all poets as Kavis. It's due to misunderstanding, not knowing the potency of that word properly. Suppose anybody who writes poetry now, we say he's a poet or he's a Kavi, we say. In a more, but there are a lot of poets in this world now, isn't it, who can write a lot of poetry. All garbage, they write it together also. So, poetry is not a carpentry of words. You can see sometimes when they write, they'll write it in a rhymey way, isn't it? So we think, oh, he's got this poetic ability. Actually, he's a poet, but he is not a Kavi. That's the important thing. So, so just as they say, a carpenter, he takes the wood and puts it together and creates a window or a door. Similarly, modern poets, that's what they do, isn't it? They pick up words together and put it together. And like a poetry, they make out of it. But it will not carry much of a weight in that. Weight means deeper thoughts inside. Deeper thoughts inside. So, so kavi is that word. So, ka darshanigan, that's another word in the Sanskrit, darshanam. Darshanam means the great sages who have propounded different philosophies. Sankhyam, Nyayam, Yogam, Vaisheshigam, Purva Mimamsa, Uttara Mimamsa. These are the Shad Darshanam. Six different philosophical approach in self-realization. Sankhyam comes from Kapila Maharshi. Nyayam comes from Gautama Maharshi. He is the propounder of that. Yogam comes from Patanjali. Patanjali is the sage. All these sages are kavis. Patanjali is the propounder of yoga. Because you can see how depth they have thought about that and they have come out this darshanam. Therefore, they have got kavitvam in that, the quality of kavi. Kanada Maharshi is Vaisheshiyam. Jaimini is Purva Mimamsa. And Vedavyasa Maharshi is Uttara Mimamsa. That is how Vedantam, what is referred to in the modern world as Vedantam, is Uttara Mimamsa. And that is Vedavyasa Maharshi. So, all of them are kavis. All of them are sages and all of them are kavis as well. Kavis as well. So, in other words, the qualification of a kavi is that he must have thought in depth. That deep thinking. In other words, vicharam, power to engage in vicharam. Vicharam is thought power. So, that they are called kavi. Then, so, practically you can see, one who is not a rishi or a sage, he cannot be a kavi. One who is not a rishi. Like Shukracharya is a kavi. He's a rishi as well. He's a rishi as well. Even though Krishna says like this, when this incident happened with Vamanamurti and Mahabali, Vamanamurti took away everything from him and Mahabali was penniless. And Mahabali was sent to Suthalam to live there, isn't it? But Shukracharya, what happened to Shukracharya afterwards? That's more interesting than anything else. We think that Shukracharya is a demon spiritual master, so he doesn't get anything. Actually, Shukracharya got more than anything else. Why? It is Shukracharya's family, Krishna has appeared. If you look at it, you can see. Shukracharya had a daughter called Devayani, isn't it? And you will know in the ninth canto, there is a story there, the incident what happened between Sharmishta and Devayani. Sharmishta was this daughter of Vrishaparva. And Devayani was the daughter of Shukracharya. And Yayadi, King Yayadi married both of them. Married in the sense, there's a whole story behind it. He was a Kshatriya king. He had, due to his prarabdham, he had to marry this Devayani. And Devayani is a Brahmana by birth, isn't it? And he is a Kshatriya and that's not allowed. A Kshatriya man cannot marry a Brahmana girl. A Brahmana man can marry a Kshatriya girl. That is Anilomam. The other one is Pratilomam, it's called. It was them days that was the system. If you take it that way, it's good. Not to bring it to today's life and try to mix it up with our present day state. There is no Brahmana now. There is no Kshatriya now. All are as Prabhupada says, it's all Shudras everywhere, he said. There is nothing different. So, in that society, Anilomam was okay. Pratilomam was not acceptable. So, what happened was, this Vrishabharvav was the king and his daughter was Sharmishta. Devayani was the daughter of Shukracharya. And King Ayadi had to marry this due to some prarabdham that is there in the ninth canto. And children were born from that. And Yadu and Turvasu, the two boys, they were born from this Devayani. And it is that Yadu's dynasty, Krishna has come, therefore we call him Yadava. Isn't it? Haraye namo Krishna, Yadavaya namaha, Yadavaya madhavaya keshavaya namaha. So Krishna said to Shukracharya, even if I don't give you anything, I'll come and take birth in your family. That family lineage from Shukracharya through daughter Devayani, Krishna has come through Yadu. As Yadu's family, he has appeared like that. So that is another thing, that was a blessing to Shukracharya from Krishna. As blessing to Shukracharya from Krishna. So that is not to be forgotten about that. So here, so this kavita, kavi, these words are important because only you will understand that depth of that verse. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram. Krishna is saying there. I think it is 5:10 now. We'll continue in the next, tomorrow. We'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada.